You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
Good morning, everybody. It's Sunday, September 20, 2015. Here with Unreal again. Hi, Unreal.
Hello.
Before we start, would you mind helping me with some housekeeping? I realized when I looked at my list, I didn't have Unreal bumper for the end of the broadcast. So, are you feeling up to a little extra for the radio broadcast?
Yeah, I was hoping to be able to upload one of those audios. I was just thinking of making a bit fun of myself first. So.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, if you're comfortable just doing an upload, that's perfect. Fine. Fine with me.
Yeah, I will try to do that. I like those small bumpers. It's quite nice to hear the different fakeologists on audio.
Well, yeah. And it appears that Dropbox gives a lot of free storage away. I just looked into my Dropbox account because Uninstall Media was sending something in Dropbox. And just by answering a few silly survey questions, I was able to get 48 gigabytes of memory, or storage rather, at Dropbox, so people can use that facility for sending me audio as well. Because obviously, I can't handle big files. Dropbox can.
Yeah, that would be the best way probably for those who record their conversations in the audio chat to send it to you.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good way. And yeah, that would be a fine way of doing it, so people can do that. And notice the recording from an Uninstall Media is very good quality.
It was. I downloaded it directly from the Dropbox, and it worked fine.
Yeah, it was very high quality, and a little too high, actually, because in terms of storage, it uses up more space, but you get a chance to downgrade it to a little less. But that's fine. I left it.
So that would mean, like, when we are in TeamSpeak, we can adjust the audio quality for our recordings at our own choosing then?
I think so. I haven't really fiddled with it too much, but yeah, it seems like...
Or maybe it was just a conversion from the WAV file to the MP3 that he had done with a higher encoding than you usually do.
Maybe, yeah. I forget what's... file it saves it in. Maybe you're right. Maybe it saves it in a WAV file.
Yeah, that was what I got from what I heard, that it was stored in a WAV file from TeamSpeak and that he converted it into MP3 and that he sent you that MP3 through then Dropbox.
Okay, that's fine then. Well, in that case, if you're going to use Audacity to do that, which is what I recommend, make sure you can switch the file to mono. Don't really need stereo, because unless it's music, you don't need stereo. That will cut the file size in half, 32.
And what encoding do you recommend?
Well, MP3. Audacity, you got to download the LAME encoder, L-A-M-E encoder.
Because you have a bitrate ratio to the
audio. Oh, right. Well, that would be... Well, the bitrate is 32. 32 kilobits per second. That's enough for audio, for voice. You could probably even drop it to 16, not notice. I'm not certain. But that's something anyone listening can easily do. I recommend recording at your end. Highly recommend it. Get good quality, and if the server messes up, then it'll back up. The audio's been great.
A good thing maybe could be that those authors of forum posts that has seen a lot of contributions, that they maybe make an audio posting about their forum post and the subject.
That would be good. Yeah, I recommend that. You can do it here in the audio chat too. Yeah, definitely do that. Because I don't even read all the posts actually.
And I guess we are all quite audiophiles, so to have an introduction in audio format would be beneficial to most listeners.
Yes, yes, for sure. I'm trying to listen to Negentropic's four audios. They're all 4 or 5 hours each. A lot of
yeah,
music,
huge.
And he doesn't explain who we're listening to, which drives me crazy. I know he has a companion notes, but I can't look at the companion notes while I'm listening.
I got the impression that Negentropic is no longer with us, but I might be wrong.
No longer with us on this planet?
Exactly.
No. He's an active poster on Disgust.
Okay.
He made a tribute to Rolo, hello, welcome.
Hello, Rolo.
Yep, thank you. Thank you, Ab. Hey, Unreal Froggy, how are you, mate? Thank you.
I'm fine.
Yeah,
good. So disrespectful, but it's funny. Let me just finish. Negentropic made a tribute to some man named Kenneth, who had a blog. And I just looked at the blog really quickly and made a link to it about 9/11 spin. And it looks interesting. I don't really have much information. Person also, but Negentropic, he's got a lot of gems in there. He must listen to 100 times more audio than you and I, Unreal, and maybe even Rolo. He has so much material that he listens to. He seems to be a fan of Red Ice. He seems to be a proponent that the Jews are at the top causing all the trouble. But once more, my view is there's no way it's the Jews. They are just the perfect scapegoat at the top. But
they are too many to be at the top. They're not all at the top.
Or the crypto Jews, everyone that wants to be a Jew. Yeah, that's the other thing. Such a misleading misdirection, and I think you would agree with that.
Yeah, for sure. I believe that the control structure is not as big as we suspect, and they keep their game close to their own.
I just finished listening to Rolo. Rolo's been active on the audio chat. Rolo, you were giving Frank a spank the other day, and I agree with your frustration with Frank's viewpoint. And I was going to drag Frank in here, but he's pulling the coop right now.
Okay, yeah, it's just his debating style. I imbibed. There were a few soldiers hanging around the place, the way that Frank brings in Ed Chiarini and Dallas Goldbug and says that this person is this person, this person is this person. Anyway, that
like
wasn't
it.
Me. It was actually our good friend up in Brisbane there, John LeBon. Yeah, they did good work on him. So I just wanted to rub a little salt in the wound. I wanted to join you guys. Yeah. I'm repeating
Unreal,
myself.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard the discussion with John LeBon and Frank. And I mostly agree that Frank is putting too much confidence into Dallas Goldbug. And that he has a very aggressive style of defending a theory that could be in parts real or not, but I'm for sure certain that it's not all factual, that all these actors are taking the places of all the different personalities in regards to what Dallas Goldbug is proposing. That's over the top, how I see it.
Literally, that's where we got to get it. Literally, Anthony Hopkins is our new prime minister. Malcolm Turnbull is Anthony Hopkins. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, that, That is wrong. That is definitely wrong. Of course, it's wrong, and it's taking our idea that that fake people are being created as vixens, for instance, and it's twisting it in a way just enough to
it's grotesque,
be absurd.
Ab. Yeah, Ab, it's yeah, grotesque. It's
yeah.
You know it. I know it, and it's an offense. I don't know if he calls himself a fakeologist, Frank the Salt Guy. I think he's an abhorrent human being.
Well, we
and,
all can see
name
quite clearly, and now, but we can all see quite clearly that when we look up, for instance, today is a beautiful day here in the north shore of Lake Ontario.
Same,
I'm looking up, the sky is blue. Now, don't tell me that the sky is red, because I know it's blue. I just, it's a basic truth that we all agree on, that the sky color, when there's no clouds or pollution in the sky, is typically blue.
I see a chemtrail.
What
there's
he
a chemtrail
saying,
up there.
Yeah. But what he is saying is just against what our eyes are telling us. We can easily see that Jodie Foster is not the other redheaded woman.
Julia Gillard.
Because their hair is red. Though red is a fairly rare color in the human population. We can see that. That's a self-evident truth. Just like a color is a color. Argue it
though,
is
again,
absurd.
My question to you, Ab, would be this. Why do you allow Mr. An Ounce of Salt a Day guy? Like, why doesn't he get flicked?
Well, I have always erred on the side of, okay, let's take these people and add our voices and outnumber his voice. And I'm a little hesitant to censor people willy-nilly. I get a lot of requests, or I've got several requests to censor all kinds of people.
Yeah, I don't blame
including,
you. I don't
including,
blame.
Including you at some point.
Oh, get out. No way. Who wants me to go? I'm awesome.
Well, that was in the past. You straighten up a bit. And by the way, I just upgraded your status to operator, so if you
oh,
want to...
Oh, thank you, my friend.
Wave
oh, good, so I can
at,
drag him in.
Yeah, that
drag
would be
him
fine,
in now.
So.
Thank you.
But could,
my main objection to this whole analysis is the fact that we all only suffice to looking at the images, and we know from 9/11 research that the images are contrived. So images in itself is not the proof of anybody being anybody. There needs to be more a thorough investigation, and it's very dangerous to be quick on the trigger and just make affirmative statements about this and that situation. We need to be very careful because this is the territory that's very, very far out there for most people. So we must be even more thorough to get very well-based proof on these matters.
Unreal, unreal. What's going on here, though, is something I think it's an underhanded trick. It's something devious. That I'm saying that I'm calling it out as a devious, underhanded trick is what Frank the Salt Guy is doing. He is intentionally trying to bring in to fakeologists, the fakeology community, something that is
absurd,
idiotic,
absurd, yeah,
absolutely space crazy, absolutely something that you wouldn't wish on anyone. Is like Malcolm Turnbull is Anthony Hopkins. That's what he's trying to bring into the conversation. It is just, and if you don't hold on topic with that guy, suddenly he's spun you off into something. He says everything you want to hear. He says, oh, yeah, no planes hit buildings. Yeah, okay. This, that, and the other. Everything that we agree with. But he's already started with the premise that Malcolm Turnbull is Anthony Hopkins. And that, to me, is abhorrent, disgusting, despicable. It is just a low, underhanded trick. And I think Frank the Salt Guy has to go. has to be played.
You, okay. Morello, you seem to be as emotional as Frank about this subject, and I think that's just the attitude we need to get away from, in the sense that we should try to use reason more so than emotions, and I feel like jumping to these conclusions are a very dangerous place to be, and that's where I think I hope that Frank will try to better establish his facts and be open to the fact that most people need very, very good evidence to even be able to discuss the subject. So to just throw out photos from Dallas Goldberg and some, you know, very quickly made images, it's not enough to be able to discuss the subject, nor to make any reasonable discussion out of it.
Well said. All right, mate. Well, look, I'm not going to argue with you, because I know an argument with you is just I know I'm going to get smacked down.
No way. I respect anybody's point of view, and I'm often wrong too, so I'm ready to be proven wrong on any subject.
Fine.
I think Frank is sort of an incrementalist, in that we say that a lot of the things we see are not as okay. Agree with that. We agree on media deception. He just
say that again.
You
cut
level.
Out a bit there, so. Okay. Take two on that one.
I would say Frank is a bit of an incrementalist, that incrementing our doubts one higher level, notching it up one more level into the absurd. And we have to remember that our views are absurd to most people. It's absurd to think that one could fake a media event and get away with it for most people. So Frank is, what he's doing is, he knows that people that listen to us already think we're absurd in our views. He comes in, he'll ratchet it up one extra level and make us doubt our own eyes. And we're telling other people, don't forget, that are not psychologists, to doubt their own eyes. Don't believe what you're seeing on the television. So he's just not ratcheting up one extra level into what we think is absurd, and that is that certain people we can clearly see are not the same, are the same. That's what he is doing. So he's trying to make us prove that he's wrong, he's trying to make us doubt our own thesis on fakeology, and all it is, it's just a form of incrementalism.
It's but at the same time, Ab, it's like for us to debunk what is proposed to us by imagery alone is also not a good place to be. I think we must realize that these occurrences could be real in some cases, but they're not so in all. There's a lot of dubious information, and when we just look at images to try to make these correlations, we will be fooled, because much of the imagery is faked.
Yes, I know. I always say I don't believe any of the imagery that we're shown most of the time. Cannot be used in the court of law, and it can't be used in the court of fakeology at all.
And so if we look at figures like Charles Manson, on that case, I would say that if you analyze it, it would be very, you know, unproductive to have an actor being in prison all these years only to have him be on television once every. So when it comes to Charles Manson, I think it's probable that that he is a fake character somehow, and who is portraying him, I'm not sure, but I think that is one of the cases where we might be suspicious.
The thing though is, if I can butt in, I just try and keep it sort of current. Charles Manson, I think, was like 50 years ago or something, or with the Sharon Tate and that whole debacle.
I listened to Megan Tropic was playing an interview with Sharon Tate. I never heard Sharon Tate speak before, and I didn't realize she was I didn't really know anything much about her, to be honest, because I didn't really deep delve into that psyop. But you know, that's on Negentropic Chronicles number one. Carry on, Roel. Sorry to interrupt. I wanted to just...
No. It's your side. I mean, I have the highest respect for you and everything you've done.
I know you do. Carry on with your thought.
My thought was, is to try and keep it current. And current is basically, if you don't stay on topic, you get spun off into crazy. And spinning off into crazy is what Frank the Salt Guy, I reckon, is. And that is that Malcolm Turnbull is Anthony Hopkins. Now, I've got books here. I've got plenty of evidence says that Anthony Hopkins is a actor who was knocking around with a guy called Tom Baker in the 60s. You know, they were good friends. I've got tons of stuff. They are then. I mean, they're a generation apart. Like, he's 70 years old. Like, Malcolm Turnbull.
I heard you
50.
On the past audios, yeah.
Go again.
Yeah, I heard you on the past audios state all these.
Yeah, I know. But, I heard that. But the thing is, if Frank the Salt Guy wants to come in and sort of say that sort of stuff in the argument of any sort of fakeology, it really does make us look like fools.
Fools.
I don't like it. I don't like those dirtbag tactics.
Well, I don't know. I have the feeling that Frank actually believes what he's saying. Unfortunately, I just feel like he hasn't done enough research to back up his claims. And to just reference Dallas Goldberg, it's not a way to prove anything, because I'm sure that Dallas Goldberg is a disinfo agent as well.
Well, I don't know. I mean, just
certainly
crazy
has
shit
appearance
to me.
And feeling, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, I just don't know where to go from here. I mean, it's like,
well, we don't have
guys...
to talk about it anymore. We don't have to go anywhere. We can drop it now because I've had enough. I can only take so much of that conversation myself before it gets super repetitive. Frank is a bit of a one-trick pony when it comes to Dallas Goldbug. All I said to him is I don't have to prove that I'm right, he has to prove he's right, and he hasn't convinced.
I know. I listened back to the argument that I had with Frank the Salt Guy, and he's so clever and so tricky. Anyway, I just want to thank, let me just say, for the final time, John Levon, while you're there, Ab, I just want to thank John Levon for, doing a good job.
Yeah, I like John. I like John Levon.
Yeah, well, he did a good job as a fakeologist. Yeah, well done, John. Okay.
Unreal, do you like John Levon?
Yeah, he's a very interesting young guy, and he's. I hope he will keep up with his shows as well. Yeah, really appreciate what he's doing.
Very good. Now you're talking with Sirius on the fakeologist forum. Or on one of the fakeologist comments on what are you researching there about history?
Well, Curious is a new fakeologist member that has evidently looked into the different theories about the construction of history. And he has given me quite a lot of good links to research that has been done mostly by German researchers into the different forgeries and the different contraptions of history in itself. And I'm looking into it right now, and it seems that it is something that we might look more into as fakeologists as well, because the present is built on the past, and to project ourselves into the future, we need to establish in a better way where we come from.
And he's saying that there's no solid history before the 17th century, really. Before that was either burned, destroyed.
Yeah, I don't know if Curious has stated exactly where he stands on the question, but he is of the opinion of most researchers on the time periods that history actually would concern, that it is much shorter And one of the researchers that has that opinion, he's called Pfister, and he says that anything that has been happening before the 17th century must be subjected to heavy critique in the sense that it's hard to establish any of it. So one of the interesting points I read in these articles was the fact that, for instance, the Chinese Wall, that there is very little proof of this wall existing before the 20th century. And it only exists in Occidental literature and not at all in China. You have drawings, pictures, everything. And nowhere can be seen this wall they have conjured up. And most probably this wall was made in the 20th century. And China as a whole country, they have falsifying their history for a long time. And there is a lot of evidence to this. Even recently, they tried to prolong their own history with about 1,000 years back.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Because history is used as propaganda to spin nationalism and to have people better indoctrinated.
Rally around the cause. Yeah, nationalism is to get people to rally around a set of ideas.
Yeah, so what better than to create a 1,000 years old traditions and history that tells you that this is just how things are. We are like together for have been forever, so we can't change anything.
Yeah, let's keep going, right? We went 1,000 years all this way. We'll do another 1,000, right?
Exactly. So what is interesting is the fact that, as we have talked about before, how much more recent the Bible and the New Testament probably is. It's probably written only a couple hundred years ago. And that the Romans, it's very funny how they were so well shaven, didn't have any steel to shave with at the time. So it's a lot of very, you know, objective observations on the history presented with. And many of the arguments seems quite plausible.
Yeah, Unreal, I just posted a friend of the show's video. It just came out today from Robin Fisher. He's a very Bible literal version researcher himself. He often videos are concentrating on just illustrating the Jesuit control structure that's stuffed in our face every day. I'm wondering if you had a chance to look at that video and give a comment on it.
Well, I just read the title. I didn't look at the video yet, but I don't believe any of the writings of the Bible or the New Testament to be true. So I'm very skeptical of any religious researcher or any religious, reference. But he is analyzing this in what way? Would you?
Well, he's very great. He's very good at compiling video clips. He often draws upon today's media, assembles it in a video to line up all the symbolism that you might not notice on its own, but when you have it stacked up and collated one after the other, you can really see patterns. That's what he's very good at, and I do enjoy his video compilations.
Would he himself be a Christian or consider himself as religious, or does he just show?
Oh, yes. No, he does. He does. I've talked to him for hours off the air, and he's definitely in Christ.
He believes in Christ, so I'm sorry to say that he's completely wrong, and there is no proof of any Christ whatsoever, and he's misled, and I kind of can't really spend my time with people that have such erroneous beliefs.
Well, I don't want to speak completely out of turn, because I'm not sure. He believes in God or God, Christ, apparently, but I think that's what he said to me many times. I just wanted to know what you thought of the
I'm sure there is a lot of symbolism, you know, hidden everywhere, because it has a very good capacity to imprint our subconscious, so they would use that whenever possible. I think if you remember, there were some researchers that actually, you know, noticed that in the JFK movie of his assassination, they could actually, you know, see there were inlays of the word sex in there. So I guess they use inlays very, very often, and that it could be more powerful than we suspect.
Well, I was just talking not so much about inlays, but just the general symbolism and the costumes and jewelry that people that run this planet wear show in plain sight, and most people have no idea what they're looking at.
Yeah.
Altogether, right?
Yeah.
Crosses.
I'll check out the video and leave my comment. But for sure, there is a lot of symbolism that we are not aware of being just symbolism.
Well, yeah, we don't get a course. We don't get a course in it, so we don't know what we're looking at. Just like when someone speaks another language, we don't know what they're saying.
Yeah, and a lot of the workings can be traced back to many occult books and theories too. So they have this kind of hidden manual of putting things together.
Yes, yes.
So the top of the iceberg of that, those hidden manuals would be like the number system where they use their ritual numbers over and over again.
Oh, yes, the numbers are a good clue.
And actually, some of the theories about how history was constructed is the fact that they do see that the Kabbalah could be one of the building stones to construct the different periods of history that they have tried to prolong as much as possible. And this is probably the same reasoning that has us believe we have an incredibly big universe, to have us have an incredibly long timeline, to make us even more insignificant where we are today.
Oh, yes. And putting the sun at the center of the universe is the ultimate tribute to sun worship, I think.
Yeah. I'm really unsure about the whole construct we live in. So when it comes to what's in the sky and the planets and the sun and the moon, it's very hard to get any, you know, factual proofs of anything, because we haven't been up there really, and it's hard to test.
It is. Every day, and I just look at it. I looked at the moon last night as I was out, and as I was moving, the moon was high in the sky, and then a couple hours later, it's right on the horizon. I wish I could figure out exactly the motion and how that happened.
Yeah, and I feel
it was a crescent. It was a crescent moon here. Is it a crescent moon there?
Pretty much, yeah. But I just quickly it moved.
It was smiling, and when I looked at it, the smile was like a normal sort of smile.
Yeah, it's been a crescent moon for a while, a couple of days now. I took a picture.
Yeah, but did you see a smile like up and down, like smile on a human being? What did you see last night?
A little. Well, not so much. I was also looking at the Big Dipper. For some reason, the Big Dipper seemed really close.
All right. Back to you, Andrew.
Well, the only observation I have been able to make myself is the fact that I feel that the size of the moon is not constant. I feel it's definitely bigger at some points and smaller at others.
Yeah.
Do you think it's getting closer and further away, or there's some
shenanigans? Well, maybe the orbit.
I'm not sure why this would be, but I just see it as very obvious to my eyes, at least. But they could be wrong too, because we know it's a lot of trouble with perspective. But from my perspective, the moon does not always have the same size.
I've always had a problem why I don't see it spinning. If we're all on spinning balls, I mean, why is the moon not spinning? I mean, is that a stupid question?
That's a big problem. Oh, it's a big problem. Very big problem. It is a big problem. Is why is the best-selling album of all time The Dark Side of the Moon? And why when I hear that over and over again, I didn't even really think time I heard that album name from Pinkus Floydus. It didn't even occur to me that there was a dark side that we never saw. I'd never heard that. And only recently, when this baller skepticism, did I know that the official story states that we never see the other side because the moon is perfectly synchronized with our orbit.
Yeah, that's right.
And
that bullshit story.
I never knew that. I had no idea that we've never seen that other side of the moon. I don't remember that in school. My slave training never had that, I don't think.
Yeah.
The other observation I have about the moon is when I look at it in the daytime, I definitely see the sky through the moon or in front of the moon. So it's like it shouldn't be so. I should see even either a shadow on the moon, the part I don't see. I shouldn't see sky instead of seeing the moon, for me.
That means that again. Explain it like we're 4-year-olds.
Yeah, I just say that when I look at the moon in the daytime,
yeah.
It seems like it is transparent or not round as it should be. Because it's like dissolving on the sides where you have like the crescents and all that stuff. But it shouldn't be so. I can understand in the dark you only see the reflection of the light. But in the day, I mean, it shouldn't be see-through.
I don't know. I can't look at it now because I don't know where it is in the sky right now.
Yeah, but you've got a memory, Ab. You've got a memory.
Oh, I know. I've seen the moon many times in the day.
Yeah, in the daytime, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And what I point to is the fact that you can't see the moon in the daytime as if it was a circular sphere, you know. It looks like it's dissolving on the sides, you know, and that the sky is in front of it, which it should be impossible in a sense that we see through the sky anyhow to look at the moon. So it should have been shadow.
Well, I never see it as a sphere. I only see it as a 2D circle. I can't tell if there's depth by looking at it from here. All I know is same with the sun. I just see a circle. I don't see any three dimensions.
I got to do something special back in 2007 and film it when it was a blood moon, and we had a clear night here, and I managed to film it. And what I actually captured on camera couldn't capture what I actually saw. In my own eyes, I saw a sort of basically a matte ping pong ball. What do you call it? One of those orange ping pong balls. That's what I saw in the sky. But I've since learned since then there's things going on in this universe or whatever it is that we are being. I think we're being toyed with. I think we might be little big guinea pigs in cages or whatever. Sounds absolutely retarded, but carry on.
I don't know about that. I'm not going to that level, but I don't know. Every time I talk about the nature of the planet, the moon, the sun, I keep repeating the words "I don't know" all the time, which is too bad. It's too
Maybe
bad.
I don't know too. But I
say it too often. Why don't we know? We should know some more.
Well, those clever people that are in charge. Either don't know either, but they pretend they do.
Yeah, I say they don't know.
Well,
but they pretend they do.
Yeah. I mean, we're clever enough to build, I don't know, some of the most wonderful, bridges and cathedrals and things like that over the years. But yeah, we still look up and go, Are stars the pinholes in the curtain of night? You know, those sort of questions.
Yes. I just watched a video I posted on my blog, morab.com, building of the Mackinac Bridge, suspension bridge in northern Michigan. Boy, it just the know-how and the engineering to build I think it's a 3-mile bridge. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
We can do amazing things. We really can. I guess the building of the Sydney Harbour Bridge would probably be quite a...
Well, that got Australia out of the Great Depression, Ab. I mean, the Great Depression, that thing that was forced upon us, this thing called the Great Depression.
A little money trick.
You know what I'm talking about.
Just flick a switch and we're out of money, right?
Exactly. But it got a bridge built across Sydney Harbour, didn't it? And it's a bloody awesome bridge. When you come down here and you visit me, you said you might come down here. You're welcome. Yeah, you certainly want to take a walk on that thing. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, they closed the Mackinac Bridge on Labor Day. We'll walk across it, apparently.
No, I'm talking about walk over the arch of it. You'd get to see, obviously, the Opera House and Luna Park and, a whole bunch of things. Luna Park.
The Mackinac Bridge is interesting in that...
Can you see the moon from Lunar Park?
Mackinac Bridge is interesting in that the middle lanes are just a steel grate. So if you look down, you're looking 150 feet down at the water, which many people doesn't work well for them.
Guys, have you guys seen that film, The Bridge? Have I spoken about this? It's a bit depressing, about San Francisco Bridge.
I saw it a long time ago.
The Golden Gate one?
Yeah, you know, they allegedly filmed people jumping.
Yeah, all right, okay. I won't get there then.
Do we agree with that, or is that just another potential fraud?
Well, I looked at it pretty closely. It looked pretty real to me, and a bit, what do you call it, macabre? Is that the word?
Are we sure, though, because it was a movie? Are we sure that it's true?
Well... post the link. I think the guy's name was Steele, Steele, that produced it. Yeah.
Someone named Steele made a.
Yeah, I know. Bridge. I thought that was pretty funny.
I don't know. I remember seeing it. That might have been in college days.
It's one of those films that you'd call it what is it when you watch. People like watching stuff.
Train wreck television.
Yeah. Really nasty, but really nasty when you've given up totally and you jump off and someone films you jumping off. I mean, that's hardcore to me. Enough stuff.
Wasn't Tony Scott, the film director, supposed to have jumped off a bridge? Not so long ago.
Tony, what did he do? He did. A really cool movie, one of my favorites. That submarine movie, Crimson Tide. He produced.
I don't believe in submarines.
I know you don't. I remember that.
You're the leading disbeliever in submarines, and I don't know. I don't know if I. I believe that the boat exists and does go underwater. I'm just not sure of its capabilities.
I think the submarines go down into water, but it stays underneath the water. It just stays there. It's not coming up. It's a rock.
I've seen submarines surface. They exist, but I just question their capabilities and their fuel source more than anything.
Well, they're mostly nuclear-powered, and they stay under the water for months at a time. So it's a little bit like the space missions. They just go under, and then they come with some film material and some... proclamations of what they have done, and I think, as you, that the U-boats, they do function in a certain way, but they cannot stay underwater for like months at a time, and they haven't been under the North Pole to plant a flag there.
Questions about them that they can't. I can leave it at that, but I'm not even sure they can fire a missile. That seems like a lot of engineering problems, but hey, it could be totally wrong on that too.
Well, it is a very powerful narrative in the story of, I think, both world wars. And I think we might have some new research on the veracity of the construct of the wars coming. I think I heard that John Le Bon mentioned he was looking into the imagery, at least, of the Second World War. So I think we have a lot of... contrived events during wartime.
He had that big color Judy Wood Second World War book. I remember listening to that. It was good.
Yeah.
And what's he talking about? He's talking about the lies that we've been told about the Second World War, right? Is that where he's going with it? I'm pretty sure that's where he's going.
Yeah, I looked into some of the imagery of the Dresden firebombing, and it does seem like some of the photos, at least, have been tampered with. So we might have a lot of imagery that's actually tampered with, and it's also questionable why they always release new photos of the war, you know, with color coming through to them and everything. It's just, in my sense, it's just a way to give us even more horror and more veracity to what actually they want us to think happened. And as they insist on it, it makes it even more questionable if all these things really happened or not.
Absolutely.
John's, sorry, Ab, you go.
Go ahead, Roland.
Yeah, I think John's, again, I don't want to speak for John, but I've spoken to him a couple of times, and he's pretty hardcore on the Holocaust. Being hollow hoax, it's being called now, is and I'm the same way. I've always had issues with it. The story that we've been told is that Germans or the Nazis systematically put them on trains, put them and then gassed them and then burnt the bodies. That is a story that is so horrific. So disgustingly awful that I can't believe humans could possibly do that to one another. And I mean, putting them into camps, yes, yeah, maybe. But
Both sides had labor camps. Both sides did.
Yeah, labor camps. That's right. But
camps,
having people
camps. We had our jobs all locked up over in North America. They were all locked up.
But to believe that humanity, no matter what race you are, like whether you're a Jew, whether you're a, I don't know, whoever they were,
Japanese.
Those sort of, go again?
Japanese.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's just too awful to think about.
It's also a very primitive way of looking at something, because the Germans, they were effective and they are rational people. And if they wanted to get rid of any part of the population, the method they try to have us believe in is not a very efficient one. It's actually a very counterintuitive one, in the sense that in a war, every resource is needed to have the war continue, and you wouldn't use as much resources to eliminate anybody. The most effective way to eliminate someone is proven by the way we do wars itself. It's by bullets. It's no doubt.
Yeah,
that's the most cheap way.
Sure. It's fast. It's efficient. Yeah. The price of lead is cheap at that time. Yeah. Hey, let's say hi to Farce Value in the audio chat.
Hello, Farce Value.
Okay. Good day, Farce Value.
Good day, all.
Try again, Farce.
I said good day, everyone.
Hello.
How are the chemtrails in Florida?
They're usually here. I haven't checked this morning, but there's probably a few outside.
We were just talking about Second World War and the Holocaust, and it's a pretty grim subject. If you want to chime in with, if you've got any thoughts on the systematic taking the Jews to sort of Auschwitz or Bergen-Belsen or Dachau. Putting them in ovens, gassing them and then ovening them, and
that isn't actually the today's topic, but
all right, sorry, you got
it. Did come up. Of course, you
can
talk about
that's kind of a
like.
Third rail topic, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
What was today's topic? I forgot.
About you and all your audios. No, we're just talking about anything that has come up in the past week and anything that is going to come up during this week. I think this is a big week in States Catholic history. Forget the Jews for 5 minutes and let's talk Catholics, because their top Catholic is coming to town.
We've had the clock bomb. That was pretty popular.
I never really caught that one. That came up in my child's school discussion media, and I had to look it up because it didn't make it to all my headlines. What do you know, Farce?
Are any of you guys involved with social media at all? Facebook or Twitter or any of that?
Not me.
I'm not on Facebook, but I do have Twitter, and all my blogs do tweet automatically. And I get a lot of views from Twitter, apparently.
I've noticed
a lot of people
on the Facebook, which I peruse regularly, I guess. I rarely ever post anything, but I've noticed that my friends and the people that are on that site have a tendency to have a hair trigger to be outraged about the latest prodding by media, whatever.
Okay.
Little tidbit that media feeds them to be outraged and incensed by. They are very eager to jump on that bandwagon, for the most part, it seems like. And so this latest psyop is that this kid supposedly built a clock. He's an aspiring engineer, I guess somewhere I read that MIT is after. He may get to visit the White House, who knows. He's supposedly a Muslim kid, Ahmed. There's a hashtag, we stand with Ahmed. And basically what he did, he took an old 70s clock and he installed it in like an aluminum briefcase with a bunch of wires sticking out of it and brought it to school. And it eventually, he was sitting in class and it started beeping, and you know, people looked at him like he was a Muslim kid with a bomb, because it looked exactly like something that Jack Bauer would be chasing on 24. But then the story is, oh, this poor Muslim kid, he's an inventor and he makes a clock, and everybody accuses him of having a bomb because he's, ethnic. Yeah,
because if someone who wasn't identifiably Muslim came to school with a ticking suitcase with a clock on it, they wouldn't be accused either.
Exactly. It's like he looked at every movie and episode of 24 decided, what can I do that looks exactly like something that would terrify everyone? Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Just rip the guts out of an old clock and put it in this little suit.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Jack Bauer chasing on 24. I mean, I've heard everything, but that doesn't mean anything to me. What does that mean? Jack Bauer chasing 24?
Okay. There was a show called 24. And it starred this actor. And the actor Kiefer Sutherland played a character called Jack Bauer.
I know him. Yeah.
Yeah. So his character was Jack Bauer, and he was always chasing down bad guys trying. And they always had a nuclear bomb somewhere.
A modern TV show.
Right. It was called
24. Oh, right. Okay. There you go. Jack Bauer chasing on 24, I'm going, what the fuck does that mean?
Very American cultural reference. I apologize.
Don't apologize. Yeah, that's fine. All right.
Yeah, I never watched that one. Yeah, that was the story of the week.
Yeah, so it was, and it turns out this guy's father is some Sudanese, sort of connected. He's probably involved with the CIA or whatever. He was involved in that up a few years back where the preacher in Florida was going to burn the Quran.
That guy since died, right? That character.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. The crazy preacher who's always burning Qurans. Yeah, he's passed on.
So it happens this kid's father was like a lawyer or something and defended this guy or helped the preacher somehow with his right to burn the Quran. He's from a different Muslim sect is less radicalized. It just so happens
that 4 years later. Point in tying these people together just so they can bring up these psyops again? That's why?
Well, there could be a longer range plan to. I mean, it's all very convenient with the immigrant thing and the kid, and I don't know, there's, it's weird push-pull thing going on here about the profiling and the anti-terrorism and all the push in the media to identify terrorism with Muslims, but then it's very politically incorrect to say that or identify terrorism with Muslims. And so there's this weird sort of back and forth going on down here that I don't really understand.
Well, just to create, it's a strategy of tension. All you need to know is a strategy of tension. It's like nuclear. It's good for us, but it'll kill us. Clean, right. But it's deadly.
Fast. Are you happy with the way that the moon landing fiasco? I think you'd have to be happy that the way NASA is starting to look like a total, complete, and utter silly joke at the moment. Are you happy with that or not?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not seeing a lot of evidence of that. I see people all the time posting pictures of Pluto, and they're all fascinated with that.
Where do you see that? Do you see that on Facebook, that they're
Facebook,
with
Google Plus, people are reposting. Look at these images of Pluto.
Is it a truism that Facebook is introducing a dislike button, or is that just?
I read that somewhere, but I haven't checked it out.
And Buzz Aldrin,
well, I dislike that.
Yeah, I dislike that. Yeah.
And Buzz Aldrin, when you saw him, did you think Buzz? Was Buzz buzzing? Because I wanted what Buzz was on. See that?
I'm sure he has access to the best meds.
Like his socks?
Oh, I didn't notice the socks.
Red and white. Waldo socks.
Yeah, Waldo socks.
Where's Waldo? Where's Buzz?
Buzz left his brain on the moon. Forget his backpack that he threw on the limb. The life support backpack.
Certainly had they didn't ask him any curly questions, did they, about things about going to the moon? Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's like the Wicked Witch of the West socks from Wizard of Oz. Toes curling up.
Well, we've lost Neil Armstrong, so we only have Buzz and Michael Collins left. And you'd think Neil might have fessed up? Never did.
He's got a wife. He's got a wife and a state to worry about.
Yeah, Armstrong was like played in like the mysterious figure, like the safeguard that makes serious people like question the whole scenario a little bit, and then Buzz is like the crazy fool up
crazy
there,
uncle.
And it's in his name too. Yeah,
crazy uncle.
He had a bit of an alcohol problem, and I can understand that too, but back in the day, he did say he was a jet fighter pilot and got there in the right way. But,
Speaking of which, unreal.
Would you say that, like Kubrick, you would say that he was already sort of the man for the job, Buzz Aldrin? Would you say unreal? Go again.
I mean, if Kubrick was behind a film or not?
Just that he was already scripted for the role. Like you said, Kubrick one night, and I was talking to you. Kubrick was the man.
Yeah, I believe that Kubrick was at least involved in the way they framed the picture, in the sense that he was kind of the avant-garde when it came to filling in believable backgrounds into movies. He had this Kodak background that he was proficient at using, so he for sure was into the scenario, but I guess we could suppose that many of the Hollywood directors are involved when it comes to important propaganda, and as we just saw, as we mentioned earlier on, with Tony Scott being such a good director and his suicide being so suspicious, he might now be in a committee where they, you know, plan new documentaries and new propaganda, and nobody would know he's even there.
Yeah, but I wasn't actually talking about. Anyway, on to the next person.
Tying it all back together, though, the kid with the clock. The Ahmed guy was wearing a NASA shirt in all the photos.
Oh, you're kidding. That's
nope.
Funny.
Oh, yeah. And the press, the interview and the videos and stuff, he's got this NASA t-shirt on. So, tying it all back.
All hail NASA. I was just going to say, just back to the point with when they came back from the, what was it, on the LEM? No, was it when he threw his backpack out? Mass value. Do you remember when he said that? Do you think he wrote that book for children or adults or the Mars book?
Well, I don't know if he had anything to do with writing it.
I doubt he did. But what do you think of my thought that NASA's chief job is to steal the imagination? Get any different types of thoughts about the nature of live or what's in the sky?
I can
say that again. That didn't come clear. That wasn't clear.
Did I get that?
I think NASA is like the Walt Disney for adults.
Adults?
Walt Disney for adults, I think he said.
Okay. First value, you have any opinions on what NASA's... What NASA's for?
When you said imagination, yeah, Disney is what sprang up in my mind, too. I guess a lot of kids want to be astronauts and stuff as well. But they definitely, I guess, they're involved in painting the mental picture of what place we occupy in this, wherever we are. They're very involved with that. But whatever that does, that's why I sort of have the, I'm not going to commit at this point, but I can see the value of convincing everyone that they're from the very basic five-sense reality that you see, the things that you see with your eyes are not what you see. Like the place we live is not as you imagine it to be.
Have you ever let rocket off, like rocket off in your own backyard, seeing what it does?
The small ones, fireworks.
Yeah, small one. Yeah, not a Saturn V. I wasn't asking if you had a Saturn V in your backyard. Well, I think your house might be a concern. But
how big are they? We don't know, though, right? They may only be 3 feet tall.
We're told that the noise they make is 220 decibels. I heard that this week.
Decimals are like a logarithmic scale, so like with every increase in 1 dB, it's like double the sound or something.
Is that right?
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Decimals are logarithmic? So 220 would blow everyone's eardrums within 100 miles, probably.
It's 20 times the noise of a jet taking off, or so, I don't know, something crazy.
Someone wrote something funny in the chat the other day. About the Saturn V taking off or whatever it is with all that sort of hot, sort of melting and none of the steel melted when it took off. It was
or
only 9/11 that the steel
even the
melted.
Stickers. Yeah, even the sticker or the paint job on the side is totally intact, but the heat was more than a blast furnace.
Yeah, exactly. So there's all that bloody combustion going on, but none of the steel's melted when they take off. It was only on 9/11 that suddenly steel started to melt.
More toasted cars.
And that was with kerosene fuel.
More toasted cars.
Yeah, more toasted cars. Fast Valley?
Yeah, people have a real tendency to rationalize everything. I mean, once they get the accepted story from the authorities, then everything else has to fit. They just have to cram all those square pegs into the round holes and just make it fit.
I have a gas stove, and when I cook pancakes on my steel my skillet, yeah, and it doesn't melt. The skillet doesn't melt. The pancakes cook beautifully. I'm still concerned by the government story that kerosene fuel melt steel. Now, is that a concern I should still have, or should I think that the fix is in?
Yeah, I posted that a long time ago about a kerosene lantern, like almost a contradictory concept.
I think you should flick me. I'm just being a pain in the ass. The fix is in. I mean, obviously, yeah, the fix was in.
It is. Any other research for its value you want to bring up?
No, I think the big one, I'm surprised, maybe they're just bombarding us more with, because I'm looking right now at there's a new video from the Huffington Post that's out with all these Muslim women standing in support of this Ahmed kid that just built the clock. And the whole story is evidently contradictory to what actually happened.
What time does the clock read?
That's a good question. I haven't checked that. I'm sure it reads 9/11 somewhere or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I want to say it says 9. Now that I'm thinking about it, I got to find a picture of, I don't know, maybe it was another clock.
Somebody find that out.
They were using it as an example. I would like to know what Kaham thinks about all this. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a Muslim. She would be an expert witness.
It's an interesting thing that's going on with this.
It's a continuation of the narrative.
Hey, Fast Value, what would you like me to ask Kay Ham? Because I know exactly she'll be here tomorrow. So what do you want to ask her about?
Well, she's a Muslim woman,
yes.
Right? So
yes.
they've you know, I don't know if she's heard about this story, but they're. Story that's being pushed, that's getting the most traction, is that this kid who's just an inventor and is engineering, you know, whatever, prodigy, made this clock, and he's getting abused because of his ethnicity, when in reality he just ripped the guts out of another clock and created something that looks like, to make it look as suspicious as possible. And then when people reacted, everybody cries foul. So, I mean, the whole thing is a psyop from back to front, but I'd just like to know what she thinks about it as a person that's, you know, from the other side. And like,
I'll grab this bit of audio, what you've just said then, and I'll play it to Kayham, and we can discuss it at length. Yeah.
And get your virtual audio cable working right away.
I should do, shouldn't I? Yeah. Thanks for that.
It's not hard. You know what? If you want, I'll help you out. Just install TeamViewer. I don't know if you like me doing that. I'll come into your computer and do it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, well, I think I trust. If I don't trust you, who do I trust?
Yeah, well, just install TeamViewer. You can look it up.
Yeah.
You only have to give me the code once. The code is only good for one session, and I think after that it evaporates, so you can watch
all
me
right.
And I'll set up.
All right, man. Yep, thanks.
If you want, I don't think you're in a good condition now to do it, but when you're ready one day.
I know. I already installed the virtual audio cable. I've only got two channels or something. I think I have to pay for the...
No, you don't need more than two. No. I think you only need one, actually.
Well, I've got it installed here, so we'll... I don't want to do it now. I mean, you're in the middle of a radio show, so I don't want to do it now.
I dropped a link in the chat that this is very interesting. If this is factual, it's actually a tweet from Obama that says, "Cool clock, Ahmed. Want to bring it to the White House? We should inspire more kids like you to the science. It's what makes America great. Kids like you to like science."
Is that Obama?
That's Obama. "Science is what makes America great." Then he's got his NASA shirt on and... a suitcase bomb.
Yes, science is always true.
It's
suitcase
bomb.
Where is Don Fox? Don Fox with his suitcase nuke.
Yeah, right. Suitcase news. Yeah, the only thing that would have been better is if they would have put a radioactive symbol on the side of the suitcase. That would have really sent the school into shutdown mode. They would have shut down the whole neighborhood.
Yeah, evidently they didn't follow any of those type of procedures, so.
They didn't go on lockdown? The guy walked, how did he get through the metal detector in every high school in America?
Yeah.
Buzzed in at the front door. Doesn't every high school and elementary school, thanks to Sandy Hoax, have a buzz code to get in? How do you get in? Homeland Security wasn't at his school, letting the children in with their ID cards? Where's the security state when you need it?
Certainly not down here, Rab. Down here, but I did hear something today that was rather concerning. They can't go to school with peanut butter sandwiches anymore. Or anything, peanuts.
They haven't been able to do that for a long time.
It only happened here recently, though, in Australia.
They should come home for lunch anyway. Get all the peanut butter they want.
There you go. Come home for lunch. Get all the peanut butter you want.
Right. Exactly.
I think we've turned the world since 9/11 into a nanny state. We've all become way too bloody precious and not been able to be. Go fast.
I found the image that. Ab was looking for. It's the second picture that I dropped into the live stream chat.
What time is it?
It's upside down, but eventually They got it somewhere. That's the hashtag, I stand with Ahmed, and then that's a picture of the clock with the 11:06, but...
Time is it? Is it 9:11?
Well, you gotta flip it. You gotta flip it upside down.
Oh my god. You gotta be kidding. Oh, I have to post that now. Never end.
Oh yeah.
It's 9:11 on the...
That's not necessarily his clock, I don't think. But that photo is floating around out there somewhere. So yeah, MIT, how about that?
Now you force me to look into the story. 9/11 story, after all, aren't they all?
Sure. NASA 9/11.
No, it's a 24-36 hour news cycle, but the 14-year news cycle is 9/11, and I think well done for keeping him on song on that.
Look it up.
So does anybody think that it's possible at this point that anyone in any position of authority that makes any decisions that have any sort of effect on people could be unaware of what the actual story of 9/11 is at this point, at this time?
Question. You're asking the question.
I down here is still... still just as believed as the day that we were told the bullshit story. So.
I'm talking about who we would describe as our leaders, per se, our elected representatives or people in positions of authority that have access to intelligence agencies and whatnot, military apparatus and spy and whatever, Congress, president. Is it possible that any of those type of people would not know the real story?
It's been so long now, I think a lot of the guys would be duped down here. But that's a good question, though. Who's still in on it 14 years later? Yeah. Question. I don't know. I'm not in on it, so I can't help you there. But that's a good question, though.
I don't know how things work down there, but in the U.S., the politicians have a tendency to be career politicians.
Yeah.
They stay
you think
for a
they
long
are,
time.
They're actually taught that 9/11 was a big scam when they do politician school?
Well, I'm guessing if anybody really looked into it and was curious, they would probably find out. I don't know if they hold a class about that. That's an interesting question.
Yeah, well. And it's like the biggest scam. I mean, in my life, I cannot believe that I was scammed so badly. And but who am I? I'm no one. But yeah, I'd like to know that all the politicians, when they reference 9/11, you know, when they get their big fucking fat faces on television and say, yeah, 9/11, and of course they're using it politically. It is a big fucking fat fucking fake. Is they're fake or they're a dupe? Because I guess a lot of people are thinking now. I know I am. I'm thinking a lot of them are dupes. I can't think they could all be in on it unless there's a big cabal, secret club, whatever. But that all sounds all conspiratorial and beer porn, and not into that sort of shit at all. I could care less. Am I on air?
Yeah, I'm hearing you. I'm just listening.
No. I think my internet's broken. Actually, I heard you just then. Can't be broken. Fuck me. Anyone else? Unreal, are you still there?
I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm listening in and...
Look, I think I am. I think I took a spliff too many. Help me out, Froggy.
On what subject? I don't...
Help me dig up. I think I've just dug myself into a hole and I don't know how to get up.
Oh, we all do that from time to time. No worries.
All right. Thanks, mate.
No, I think you were discussing more of the media events recently that I haven't really read so much into, so I'm just not able to comment so much about those stories right now. So, Forest Valley, you are more following the current events through the news. Do you have any sites you regularly use to check out what's happening, or Huffington Post? I heard you check out, or
Not in particular. I get most of my news now from No Agenda. I kind of let them aggregate and give me the cliff notes, I guess. But it is interesting to listen to those guys because they do have a lot of source material. And that stuff is kind of, it's sort of hard to come by because once the story goes out into the media, it just gets disseminated with all everyone's opinion and their particular slant. And then that gets requoted and it just I don't know. It's like a cloud and eventually you sort of see like an impression in the cloud and it's they don't always have the facts, the original story and who said what readily available. If you're just browsing, I don't know, Yahoo or Google or whatever the MSN front page or whatever people use for news. It's by the time you read a story, it's 10 versions removed from what originally happened, you know? So, those guys are pretty good about finding source material from like the politicians and stuff. And I find that to be, I don't know, fairly, I wouldn't call it alarming. It's kind of almost comical really to listen to the things that these people in supposed positions of authority actually say, because it's just insane for the most part. And I don't think most of the people that I know pay too much attention to those people. People look at the news and they sort of accept that as what's going on, but in reality it's just sort of that's kind of a low-level ongoing psyop all the time, is just all the nudging of a perception in a particular direction 24/7.
So I guess deception, the elections are coming up quite often.
In a particular direction. I like that. Rhymes. Deception in a particular direction. Hey, Fast Valley, you've got some poetic skills there, my friend.
I lost my train of thought. So I guess,
all right, I'll leave. I'll leave. Hey, thank you.
No. Actually, I got sidetracked because I had a line of a song that I wrote a while back, and I thank you once in a while when I think of this line because it's about arguing with the TV.
I think
I've heard you do an entire rant at the television.
Oh yeah, what? Tell me about it. Oh, me? Do a rant? No way. Really? Yelling at the world. I'm good at that. And someone tried to tell me that I don't love America. I love America. Of course I love America. But when it comes to rants, I'll rant. I'll have a good rant.
Yeah, what is America? That's my
question. We're all living in America.
I was waiting for you to start singing that. That's a great.
You want to?
Yeah, there you go. I have to change your Bluetooth. We're all living in America.
America.
I've got to go, guys. My wife.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. All right, nice chatting with you, Trollo.
Yeah, Trollo. Trollo, thank you for that. That's a great one. That's my new nickname, Trollo.
That's a good one.
All right, see you guys.
Good. I like that. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, over now. Over now. Bye.
Bye. Guess they had to put Trollo to bed, eh?
I'm just looking at a headline here that's actually from a little over 2 years ago. Edgar Mitchell testifies to extraterrestrial visitations.
Yeah, they are pumping the alien angle a little bit through their astronauts now and through the new discoveries of new Earth-like planets and all that storyline.
Yes.
So, Bart's Value, have you been following the Bull Earth debate or have any points of view on that whole discussion?
I've sort of left it alone for now. I think I definitely have questions about the model that we've been given. There's definitely things that don't really add up to my experience. But I think that if you open that conversation with people, they expect you to have all the answers about whatever any alternative would be, whether you know what it is or not. And so if you don't have those answers ready, you know, I guess there's some arguments. Well, we can predict when we're going to see Halley's Comet or whatever. Like, I guess Simon Shack posted, there's points where you can see the sun at certain times of the day simultaneously that are too far away to make sense on a flat Earth model. And so there's some contradictions, I guess, on both sides that don't necessarily have, that I don't have ready answers for. So I'm comfortable enough being skeptical and admitting that I don't really know exactly what things are, and I know NASA's full of crap, and I guess that's enough.
Probably, yeah. You bring up the topic and you don't have the answers. Right. All I have is the questions, not the answers. Not good enough for most people, is it?
Based on most subjects, they want us to tell them the conclusion, you know. So that's something we learn through schooling, and also the media that has the same role of being the authority to give us the truth, so we can know what to think.
Problem.
So far, Solly, I'm more meant to ask you what you thought about the debate on the subject of the shape of the Earth as a whole. If you feel there is some contrived entities out there that are misleading us, or how you see the debate as a whole.
I guess it would probably be disingenuous to think that's not happening. I find the infighting to be a little bit. I don't know, that almost seems contrived to me in a way, like this sort of readily created opponents of the shill alerts seem to come out really quick, and so I find that to be a little bit, I don't know, suspicious maybe.
I agree.
You know, it doesn't seem like that there should have been enough time for those things to really gel into the sort of opposing camps that it almost seems like they were ready made that way, I guess. And that to be a little suspicious, I guess. And that's another thing too. I don't see why it can't be two things. I don't see why they can't be, putting out some, you know, truth about the reality of the situation where we are, and also using that same truth to discredit things by association.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that if we have something we can be sure of, is the fact that they always come with a lot of good information in between their contrived information. So, yeah, I really agree with that.
Truth is a poop.
The Earth could actually be flat, but they can also use that to discredit people and make them look like idiots. I think that's possible.
That's a good point. They always would like to... mislead us anyhow. That would be the position that's the most favorable for them, to have us not knowing, or those who knowing doubt if they know something or not.
Inversion principle.
I didn't catch that, Ab. It's a little broken.
Unreal, that's a little bit of your inversion principle.
Yeah, they will, because that's the best place to have people at the opposite, you know. Then you know they have no clue, no way of getting close to what's really the case at all. And by the fact that our brain is like working with two brain halves, I think it's a position, if you're at the opposite, you will have a very hard time to switch. And it's also lends credence to the theories, because the fact of them being at the opposite makes them seem plausible to you, just because they're at the opposite. So it's a double-edged sword in two ways.
And there also could be that, I think, maybe in the case of, well, I don't know if 9/11 is a good example, because I was so invested in that initially in the official story. I just bought it hook, line, and sinker for a couple of years, probably, before I really started to change my opinion about that. But they may make things in a way that the people choose. So they have to actually make, I don't know if I'd call it a conscious choice, but at some point they break with reality, right? And they say, well, I'm going to accept that these planes can melt through buildings, and that's just the new reality of the way I see things.
Yeah.
That's, So then that changes their entire perception of reality, and then they can no longer see the contradiction of a plane like disappearing into a building and accepting that as a graphic as opposed to a real thing, right?
So, and that would also serve the purpose of having people not trusting themselves even more, because maybe have, you know, played with the thought that they shouldn't trust what they are told, and then they go back to trusting it, even it being so absurd. So they will actually have less ability to be able to trust their own judgment the next time also.
Right. So if the ball is, you know, maybe that's not a threat to them at this point in their estimation, that they're, we're beyond the point where people could really accept a different model, regardless of how much evidence is offered to show that there, you know, the contradictions in what we've been presented, that they, it won't matter. They will never be able to look at that and
look at the contradictions in a meaningful way. Don't you think that coming out with the new missions to Mars at a very convenient point, where when people will see actual astronaut at the planet Mars, they cannot believe anything about a flat Earth or any other shape of the universe than what they see on TV, don't you think?
Right, exactly.
They are,
I mean, maybe the thing would be to go about it in a different way and start a big push for real-time video of the Earth or something from, I don't know, the space station. Oh, I gotta duck off for a second.
Ab, we're just doing your juicing there, or we heard some sounds of a mixer?
No, I just was hooking up.
You're not coming through very well, Ab, so I don't know if maybe it's your...
Yeah, yes, I'm on the Wi-Fi, but maybe the Wi-Fi sucks. Here, how am I now?
Now you are fine.
Better now?
Yep.
Well, your posts are curious. You guys are talking back and forth.
Yeah, he has insights into this subject, which I feel could be a very important field to look into, in the sense that so much of our news picture today are built on events from the past. So if we can deconstruct those events too, I mean, we can, unfortunately, we'll be even further for being able to discussing this with the regular man in the street. But at the same time, we might be able to understand their playbook a bit better. In some ways, when we can get closer to who has contrived history at the beginning, we might also be able to pinpoint with much more validity the people that actually could be behind the power structure today, because the same people that has manipulated history, those people are surely involved today as well, as the history hasn't changed since the time of the luminaries.
I agree. Power grid, the power structure has been there forever.
Yeah, and I feel like that's a task that we do have to look into, to try to identify with more precision who the entities behind this are. And I think in that sense, to go back and look at the families and the people involved in the falsification of history could be a good indicator of where we should look for these people today.
Yeah. What names? Do you have any of the names? Are they many Venetian, Roman type names?
Well, I have not pinned down the particular names yet, but I think if more of us look into the historical aspect, it would be interesting to compare what we find in our research. And I would love for Jan Erik to come back to us here on Fakeologist and contribute all his research and view on these topics for sure.
Yes, Jan Erik, come back. I know you're listening.
How do you know he's listening?
I've seen a message.
Oh, that's cool. So if Jan Erik is out there, big hello to you, and hope you come back on the audio chat in the time to come, and put up a comment or two in the different threads, especially on the archaeological side of things, in the sense that what we could start to see now is the fact that even if it's built in stone, is actually not enough to constitute real proof, in a sense that we can see there have been falsification of those historical monuments, and some have been very well identified, and I think others remains to be so.
And says Bauer or Red Shield.
Yeah.
Bauer or Red Shield. Jack Bauer?
Those names seem funny.
Yeah, Rothschild. You want to read the chat? She's...
I think Jan Erik had some pretty... He lent a lot of credibility to the architecture, from what I recall, as far as the castles and stuff that are... Well, you should be able to see things there unreal and kind of verify that there's some historical credibility in some of the structures that are there, right? The Notre Dame...
Yeah. Yeah, what I've seen just now when I'm starting to look into it is the fact that a little bit like Chris Kendall has told us about the beginning of the printing press, where the first story in the printing press was these magical creatures strolling around on the moon. Archaeology has the same type of beginnings. The first stories that came out was Stonehenge and Pompeii, and both of those events can be very positively, I think, considered to be manipulations and also reconstitutions of events that probably did not take place. At least when it comes to Stonehenge and when it comes to Pompeii, at least the drama aspect with all the human figures suffering is at least contrived, whereas the volcano is, of course, real. But they have constructed the whole storyline around it and verified it by the seriousness of this new scientific discipline they present at archaeology, which is probably nothing more than another way to indoctrinate us with a contrived history to go as far back as possible in the same way they try to have the universe be as big as possible.
And rotating around the sun.
Yeah.
From what I remember about Pompeii, if I remember but the early school stories, it's some of the people were frozen in place, right? They were entombed in lava in their beds or whatever, or standing in the kitchen with a pot.
That's right. That's so funny.
Now that I think about it, that seems very unlikely. And from what I understand, lava moves fairly slowly.
Turtle.
Unless it was a huge, tremendous explosion where this bucket of lava was just falling.
It was It was Judy Wood lava.
In saying it wasn't the lava, it was what was it that petrified everyone in place, though? That's the question.
It seems like it's the same script writers that wrote the script for the atom bomb in Japan, where people just justified and were like shadows with their screams on their face. I mean, it's the same script to make a story so horrendous that we like crumble up in fear. It's the same narrative they impose time and again. And in the case of Pompeii, as Ab, you say, it's impossible to just stand there and see the lava come towards you and not do anything. And if you were taken by the lava, you would be seen struggling by getting away or something. You would see legs or, you know, it's just...
Pinan is saying it wasn't the lava. So Pinan, please come into the chat and explain it to us. He could.
Oh, it was the ash that killed them. It comes
dust,
back to the same thing. It's like, how would you find those people afterwards, anyhow? And if they burnt up, why can we see their figures still? You know, there should have been nothing left.
The way I pictured in my kid's mind when I first heard the story was that they were kind of like statues, almost. They were just frozen in place, sort of. I don't know. That's the way I remember it from being a kid.
If you have burning lava covering up a person, how can you see the shape of a baby afterwards? They would just be like, nothing left. It would just be it wouldn't be a human figure anymore after the flesh is burnt off, you know? And that's what they present. But anyhow, I think it's fairly well proven how Pompeii is contrived. And there's also been written books on this subject, so it's up for anyone to go and check out. Unfortunately, most of that material would be in German. But only by the storytelling we can recognize the same script as from the atom bombs and other non-events.
I guess we lost Ab for a second.
Yeah, as he's on the Wi-Fi, it's probably a little bit on and off. So you, Forest Valley, you do remember being told about Pompeii as being young, I guess.
I have a vague recollection of it. I guess the story that I heard initially was what stuck with me, and the way I recall it, I recall like almost in my mind from when it. Now this is when I was a kid, probably younger than 10, maybe a long time ago. It was like a museum, right? Like people are standing in these everyday poses and they're doing things, and they're just sort of frozen in place because I always thought it was the lava, but. And saying it's not the lava. For some reason, something caused everybody to get frozen in the middle of their activity, and due to this volcano.
So my point of view would be that when we, for instance, this storyline is very similar to other storylines we have found out having been falsified, and when you see the movie industry, you know, backing this up and reinforcing these early memories we have of the events. I mean, is there a landmark on how they have contrived the picture of history? You know, it's like it will be obvious by how they promote their own work, how what is contrived and not as well. It's like there's so many films about Pompeii, and it's so many films about the different events when it comes to the Second World War or the nuclear weapons. So they push their propaganda time and again, and they use films to do it, and we can, I think, gain some information about what are the agendas they have, concocted for us.
I agree. I guess the thing that some people have asked me, well, family members say, what are these people, what do they get out of it? Why do they care? They're not going to be alive in 100 years. So why would they bother to perpetuate all these lies and do all these things? And I don't really have any evidence to support the idea that whoever manipulators, controllers, have any particularly expanded life expectancies, right? So there's a continuity that is in, I guess it's a system that's in place that maintains continuity over long stretches of time, right? I'm always curious about how that's managed. How the mantle is passed from one generation to the next.
Yeah, I agree. That's a very interesting and difficult question. My suspicion would be that these people are family related through blood, and if they would be interested in science in any way, they surely would be interested in prolonging their own existence on the planet. And if they are, then we could, ponder upon how long a human can live if it is in optimal condition and is not being, poisoned in the way that regular people are, and that the body would always have the nutrients and the different base materials that we would need to maintain a optimized body and soul, you know.
So do you think that they do have a protracted lifespan? It's like, I remember Jan Erik saying one time that he was of the opinion that they don't even wear fabric that has any type of fiber that would interact with the skin in a way to introduce toxins into the system that the very, I guess, insulated from all the toxins that we're ingesting on a regular basis one way or another, whether it's water or clothing or chemicals, that they have some ways of isolating themselves from that. So maybe their lifespan is somewhat longer. Maybe if you had an extra 50 years, that might give you an advantage of being able to acquire some knowledge that would make you in a position to be able to manipulate people, right? If you had an extra 50 years to figure things out.
I completely agree. I think if we could only add on like 30, 40 years to the average lifespan of some families, they would suddenly live until their 140s and maybe be in perfect mental condition throughout that lifespan. And the amount of knowledge you can gain in those years, I think it's quite significant.
Right, if you could maintain your motivation and stuff, that's a bit of the issue that I'm having these days. Just the, keeping the energy level up. I'm in good health, but it's sort of like you just have to keep answering the question why every day. Right?
Yeah, my personal experience the last year or so has been that when I consume less sugar, my system actually works better. So that would mean sugars in the form of bread and pasta as well as regular sugars. So, but when it comes to the motivation of the people being in the power structure, is like when we go in and research any field, we can see it has been tampered with. So, I mean, their level of, you know, activity and motivation must be very high because they have so many agendas going on at the same time.
Right. That's what I was saying. That's my struggle lately. It has less to do with help than it does to do with motivation. So I guess if you're able to live longer and keep your motivation and activity level high, if you have the mental acuity to continue your agenda, that would make a big difference. I think if I had another 100 years, but what would take would be the enthusiasm and energy I had in, say, my 20s and the motivation. But I think a lot of that was sort of driven by ignorance too. If you have the idea that everything is wide open and there's no limitations, and now at this point you're finding everything is rigged, so it has a sort of a and maybe that's the effect that they want it to have too. So
yeah, I think to separate the people that don't know from those who know in the best and the most significant way is a very good assurance for that the masses would never be able to actually be on board with what's really happening. And I agree with you. It's discouraging in some ways, but it's at the same time, for us to have the ability today to understand so many new things and to be able to talk about our research with the like-minded people from different areas on the globe or on the flat plane is quite a chance too. So it could be that we should be motivated by the progress we can make in our lifetime, which I don't think any previous generation would have in the same sense then.
Do you have any sort of idea or opinion on what, I don't know, I'm not going to say Bill Cooper, Mae Brussel. I think they've been sort of exposed to be less than authentic, at least. But that there were people, if not that David Irving or, I don't know, somebody somewhere always trying to put out their tracts or pamphlets or, you know, everybody that comes to mind that I'm thinking of, I've heard is compromised, whether the John Birch or anybody warning about this and that. There's always, I think, been a fringe, right, that's trying to expose something. But do you think there any of these people had any sort of real connection, or it's just the internet and the you know, the obvious mistakes they're making in the media that has sort of started to lifting the veil on what's happening.
I would suspect them of always leading the opposition and creating the opposition. So I think that as much as we could believe that researchers would be able to help us all the time, I also think that the most powerful tool against this propaganda is logic and the able the ability to think in on a wider scale, to see the bigger picture, to not get hung up in the details, to understand what is being done as a whole. So when I think of those researchers you mentioned from far ago, long ago, I would believe that the researchers they would promote today would be the researchers they actually had themselves, and not the ones that were genuine. And the genuine ones probably didn't get much publicity at all. And all we have now is the researchers that was put out there to lead the opposition.
That makes sense. I mean, it's interesting you said create, and I heard that was actually the full quote from Lenin, excuse me. Basically, it's an abbreviation of the quote that we always hear, the best way to control the opposition. But you said create. I think that's probably more accurate. I think that,
The principle, you're right. I was thinking about that quote, but I might have it wrong. But I think the principle is that it is very efficient to control your opponent and to have other people, you know, believe that you have real opposition, whereas this is mostly not the case, because you have insight into your opposition, the true opposition that would rejoin your created side, and you will be in a better position to defend yourself that way.
I mean, it makes sense to me that they would put the opposition in place the same time they start the new phase of the agenda. If they are like the 9/11, for example, I think it was all done at the same time. I don't think there may have been some things that happened later that were a reaction to certain things that were not within their control per se. But I think that for the most part, the controlled opposition was part of the plan as opposed to a reaction to.
Of course, I think you're exactly right, because imagine if you were going to commit a crime, you would probably have to think about who should be, taken to investigation and probably judged for the crime if you want to get away, you know? So that's just a logical step for anybody who plans any event to think of the repercussions afterwards. So you will try to find the guilty ones, or you will present the guilty ones quite early on, and you will also construct the critique of what's happened. So yeah, I 100% agree that they must think of this beforehand and have all these different sides ready, so that when something new comes up, they have everything in place to defend themselves in an efficient way.
Have you seen a television program called Black Mirror yet?
I have not, but I have heard about it. Have you followed it?
I've watched a few of the episodes. It's very interesting. I heard Chris Kendall and Jay Dyer talking about a couple of them, and they mentioned one that I hadn't seen at the time, and then I had seen one they didn't talk about. But they're very limited. I think I have two seasons, and there are only three episodes. There's only six episodes total. But one of them has to deal with co-opting the opposition, and it's very, very interesting. And so I was doing a little tangent here, a little research on revelation of the method, and I guess that term is not that old, actually. And I think there was some particular researcher that coined that not long ago. That I guess the point being is we're not sure that that's in any sort of protocol that's followed by the manipulator, if whatever the reason that that's done, I'm not really sure. But I would definitely sort of put this episode in that, if not in that category, it's somebody that's very attuned to the way things work and how people get co-opted. And I was curious if you had seen it. I'd like to know your thoughts on it if you get a chance to look at them. It's very interesting.
For sure, I read a bit about it, and now as you mention it, I will try to have a look at it, and for sure, if when I get to see it, it would be interesting to change ideas about that production, of course, yes.
And it, I think what it has to do with, too, what I'm, it just reminds me of the, say, the celebrities and music acts and stuff. I think I don't have any trouble believing that a lot of people, that a lot of the musical talent that we imagine is somehow involved is maybe a lot less involved on a higher level. I think it's very, very easy to co-opt musicians and have them serving the agenda in one way or another without them being aware of what they're doing. I know that I was a musician for a long time, and in the early days when you're playing clubs and you're trying to get a break, if somebody were to come to you with a contract, you wouldn't ask any questions. There would be no questions.
Yeah.
They shot a music video and they wanted to put pyramids and all seeing eyes and triangles and 666 all over it, and you just, you're like, oh, whatever. This is great. Fine. It's all good. They'd tell you what your tour schedule was, and you'd see your album in a music store, and it would be no questions. They might, I could see how they, I don't know if you're familiar, but I read recently that, I guess, in the 2014 Grammys, a lot of the big hits are written by, actually, these Scandinavian guys.
Right.
Max Martins, and they're writing hits for everybody from Pitbull to Taylor Swift, and it's just a small team of people that are writing a lot of these hits, and so they have a formula for how a song is constructed. And if you were a young artist and your producer said, look, I want you to perform these songs, and these writers have a good track record, we're going to put you in the top 10, the artist would go along with it, and then the writers would be able to put whatever they wanted to into the content of the song, and the artist would ask no questions, and they wouldn't know. I don't think at all. I don't think they would even think about it.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I also think what we talked about earlier about the age of the people that actually might be the masterminds, if they are a little bit older and have even more knowledge than we would suspect, I mean, they would, of course, use other people on a need-to-know basis and have the experience to have them know what they need to know at the different stages. So maybe these musicians, when they're older, they can be, you know, enrolled in other programs and probably could have, you know, more important roles in what's being at hand. And they would then have also children that they would need to ensure have the best future possible. And who's better to ensure a future than the king of the world, so to say?
Sure. And actually, you know, you say that at this last interview with Clint Richardson that Chris Kindle did, and I've heard this from other sources too, that Clint was talking about the genealogy and the connections of the Hollywood machine and how everyone is connected out there, and some, he calls them bloodlines. I don't know about that term.
That's very interesting research, and I listened to Clint Richardson for some time, and I haven't got to hear any shows where he goes really deep into the provenance of these people and their links than in Europe, etc. He's more talking about like the most recent personalities in politics, but I'm not sure if I believe the people in politics are really that important when it comes to taking more strategical decisions on what is going to be done on a worldwide basis somehow. I don't know if you might have listened to...
Well, I don't know if they're important as far as the strategy, but it's probably important that they know how the game is played and their expectations are not different when they assume that role. So if people were coming up from the bottom and they had this idea they were going to get into office and change things and make a difference and all this sort of thing, it might be a problem for the manipulators if too many of those type of people were to assume those roles, then it might... It just might make the road bumpier for them, you know?
Yeah, because if I was like imagining how they would use these people, they are just like a handy, a working class for them, you know, doing the acting. And as they are very privileged in regards to how they lead their lives and how they have other people admire them, and they must be very easy to keep in place somehow. And as they seem to all benefiting from that position in their families, like every actor is the son or nephew of some other actor, it's like it's a well kept secret in their trade, and the trade is kept in their families. But that doesn't mean that these families are at the top of what's being done on a larger scale when it comes to like the politics for the development of the world as a whole.
Right, and I think probably one place you might look would be at the management and management structure of these industries, whether they're producers, studio heads, label head, I don't even, maybe even, and you go further to board of directors and stuff, people that, you know, all the actors and actresses and stars and even politicians occasionally and the president, of course, these people all change. But then once you get into the management structure, you probably find that a lot of people in those positions have been there for a long, long time. And they're the ones that are probably actually setting the standards and making sure that things go in a particular direction.
I agree with you. I think those people are definitely above the ones we will see physically on the stage, so to say. And when you think of how many people that would amount to that is in management of these industries, the press, the movies, the music, or the sciences, the history, every of those departments, you could also easily think that these people also take their orders from other people and that they as well are not at the top of the game.
Exactly. And even if they're not necessarily part of a particular family, the way the institutions are set up, and I'm sure it's every particular, whether it's in the acting or music or the science in particular is a little easier to understand because the groundwork is published. The frame, you need a 4-year degree, and then you need a master's, and you need a PhD, and you have to have someone approving your thesis at every level, and there's this sort of deference to authority that has to happen at every step in the process until the person has been vetted and approved and sanctioned by that establishment. And when they get to that point where they're at a higher level doing higher level research or teaching, they're so fully invested in the system that there's no way they can be a dissent from the popular or the prescribed opinion
and
or attitude. Right?
You would need a lot of investment to conduct these experiments and to go further with the science. So it's like they can brainwash these scientists for 5 to 10 years and then dictate them by the money to do the research and find the different subjects that you would like them to find.
Right, and there's not going to be any opposition to that. It's especially if by that time these people probably have families, they may have 15 exactly. years invested or 12 or 15 years invested in their education and the money. And then, so, yeah, that's, you're not going to hear anything that's in opposition to the prescribed, doctrine.
Exactly. It's, they are in, they're locked down from the process itself. So it's like, if they want to go against the wind, they need to abandon, things so important in their lives that, it would be very improbable and seldom that this would occur.
So it's up to us.
It is.
It's up to the internet community. The neckbeards in the basement.
Exactly, the artists and the you know, the borderline figures that hasn't accepted that things have to be the same forever, you know, and so unjust.
I think from my perspective, it's just I find it fascinating, I guess, to try to figure out what's actually going on, and I guess it's too, I don't know if I would call it liberating so much as just better than the alternative of not knowing. And I don't really have very high expectations of most people of actually paying much attention to this sort of thing, to be honest.
I think you mentioned the main obstacle earlier on. It's motivation. What motivation does the normal man have to learn all that we are interested in? He will not get a more a wealthy life in many ways. It's only going to cause him trouble, as they would see it. So it's like, it does take a special kind of personality to actually feel like that the truth is more valuable than all the troubles you will have for knowing it, you know?
Right, and I have said before that I think people may have an intuition that comes gets engaged about what the consequences of pursuing that line of thinking would be, and then they can shut it down. Like once I saw the Harley guy, I think it was. There were a couple of things, but once I saw something that was just too obvious for me to ignore, then I there was no stopping it. There was no turning back at that point. I just was like, oh, I have to find out more. And then I watched September Clues, and then got involved in the forum, and it's just been, there's no turning back.
Yeah, it's the same for me. It's like, I just feel so somehow insulted intellectually by having been brainwashed as a child, so I feel a duty to myself to get it the straight way now, and at least don't lead my whole life as if all this nonsense was true, because I can see the signs of falsehood very openly now that I have started to open my mind to it, you know.
And yeah, true, and you're actually sort of rescuing yourself as well, and that's another thing I realized too, because this information was fed to us and sort of insinuated into our minds when we were so young that if you don't rescue yourself, you're sort of living a life that's really not yours, right?
That exactly. Sense. That's very well said. Yeah.
And so I feel like it's sort of a responsibility for the time that I have left to be as authentic as I can and make sure that the life I'm living is actually, isn't as much as they can be, that my thoughts are my own. And I still have to question that all the time. But if they're not, then what have you done? You've spent your time, living by someone else's plan and agenda. I guess that's probably not a problem for a lot of people, and maybe I don't know if it's the key to happiness to do it otherwise, but I think it's, for me, it's better in any way.
I agree. I think most people, they are pretty happy by having others take the decision for them, and that they can pretend that it's their own. But once you understand that most of our ideas have been fed to us when we have been indoctrinated as being even very young, then you, of course, also could feel that urge to live your own life in a real way and actually get to terms with what is what and how you can make most sense of your existence. As you say, yeah, I feel that way myself, for sure.
There's a comment from PNN here in the chat. She says, do you think the dramatic changes in society are beginning to disturb, frighten, or anger people?
Yeah, go ahead, Parswell. If I should think about that question, I think it's not happening as much as we'd like to believe. But what would you say, Parswell?
Well, you know, that's the I would wonder about the word dramatic too, because a lot of the drama that they think we experience is in reality it is drama. It's a stage play, right?
So yeah, exactly. It's it's staged, as you say. Yeah.
If you look around you, and if I look around myself in my own life and the things that I experience in my five-sense reality on a daily basis, I don't come across much of any of the type of thing that the media is promoting. And I do have the impression that, I mean, obviously the powers that be invest a lot of time and energy in creating this reality for the people, so they must find some value in it. So if it's a strategy of tension, then it must be making people more tense and more, I guess, pliable in that sense. So I would suspect, it says, am I bothered by changes in airports and workplaces? The airports, yeah, I do miss the days when I could walk to the airport or arrive 15 minutes prior and walk right on the plane. Do I think people notice these changes? I don't think they care that much. I don't think people are bothered. Like, I've never been through a backscatter machine myself. I just always get the pat down, and it's never been a real problem for me. But I'm usually the only one out of 500 people that's doing that. So,
but I think people buy the poor explanation from the authorities of the reasons behind this. I when I'm in airports and I react to getting searched and questioning the value of going through such controls, in the sense that we haven't caught any terrorist from the beginning with this method, and people just would look strangely at me and believe it's all done for their own safety, so they're all with it. They think it's good.
I mean, yeah, that's the question. Is the opinion has a couple. There, that's two different things. It's like whether people are bothered or disturbed or frightened, and whether we are. So I think.
Oh, yeah, you are right. So I'm a bit angry about it, of course, because it's a situation when you're at the airport where you really see how indoctrinated the public is, and where I find it difficult sometimes to be treated like an animal, and but then again, it's like I try to philosophize a little bit, and but it is a difficult point. Yeah,
I don't know what it's like over there. I don't know what it is in Canada, but my wife travels a lot, actually, and for, I think it's about $120 for 5 years, you can get a trusted traveler pass, and that just allows you to walk. And almost most airports, almost all the time, you can not take off your shoes or your belt, or don't have to pull your laptop out of your bag and all this nonsense. And there's a special line for people that have
that's
that.
Incredible.
It's really funny. And
the line is almost always empty, isn't it? The line is very. The line's almost always empty, and they invite the non-trusted travelers into the line to keep the guy busy.
And
I've seen that before.
The level of vetting is not that severe.
I wanted to, Forest Valley, can I ask you something about No Agenda? Because I know you're a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Follow the show, No Agenda, still?
Yes, absolutely.
I think Adam brought his wife over to the U.S. just to give her a green card, because it sure looks that way. He doesn't
Oh, I didn't follow it that much. I didn't know how long they were married or any of that kind of stuff. So,
I didn't either. But just on the surface, it's always talking about trials and tribulations, upgraded lives in San Antonio.
I have some experience in that area, because I married a girl from Moscow many years ago. Mm-hmm. And she had come over here with her mother, who is a world-class classical pianist who teaches at one of the universities here. And it was very interesting because they took to the capitalism right away. They're big fans of materialism.
Are you still married to the woman?
Oh, no. I put her through investment banking school, and she got a job with a big iBank that folded about a year later, and then she had a headhunter, and she got this huge signing bonus, and the second year she got a bigger signing bonus and went to work for another iBank, and then it was right shortly after there that she wanted to feel like what it would be like to be single in the big city with this huge mega salary and all this money in the bank and her green card and everything. And so that was the end of that.
Had another iBanker.
Yeah, I think from what I understand, she's not even doing that anymore. But yeah, I went through that whole process. It took a few years and the interviews and all that sort of stuff. And I was doing it with the best of intentions. And who knows, maybe she was too. I don't know. All my friends think otherwise, but I gave her the benefit of the doubt.
But anyway, I just thought that was the obvious question. That
I guess that's possible. I don't know enough about who she is or what you know.
Well, I understand. I know you're a fan.
He's kind of tight-lipped about it, from what I recall.
Already hanging out with some other.
Yeah, he doesn't. He probably doesn't really discuss that too much. I have a sort of reticence to be involved with people with their personality, the personal. I'm always kind of fearful.
Mind
your
own business.
Well, I'm fearful that if I meet someone that I admire and they turn out to be a jerk, that I won't like them, what they do creatively anymore after that. So.
Oh, okay.
So, like, you know, if it's better maybe sometimes not to know about people's personal lives if you like what they do.
Yeah, I only bring it up because South Park got it, because he talks about all his trip life and all the things he had to sort of follow up with.
Yeah, I think at this point we're losing more than half of what your comments are.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, no wonder I didn't have the Bluetooth on. Sorry about that. Stupid. Sorry about that.
That sounds great.
Well, anyway, I just thought that was a point to make.
I guess that's possible. But yeah, I was always interested about hearing his airport stories, because the trusted traveler thing is the way to go if you do a lot of flying. It's not that painful to get one, from what I understand, and it's worth every penny.
Well, it's my money thing. They got to pay for all that extra salary, I guess, if you want the books and the money system. I've always opted for the pat down too. Hardly ever travel by air, and it's quite personal, actually.
My experience has been less than that. Most of the gentlemen that have done that have not been too eager. They seem to be fairly well rooted in their heterosexuality and masculinity, and they're not real eager to go fondling other men. So my experience has been not very invasive, thankfully.
Look at them as any other person who works at a job he hates. Well, he hates to do it, and he has subscribed to any of the tenants, just like, well, someone at McDonald's doesn't eat food. So someone told me they can't bring in outside food to the restaurant. Have to eat it.
Wow. That's frightening.
Frightening, huh? That's why they look like they eat it, most of them.
When it comes to planes, we often forget that the people that has the positions, they have their own plane.
Yeah, the rich people don't fly through the airport, you're right. No TSA at their private gates, I don't think. They might have some guy they know over there, but that's about it.
Exactly, so like they are not touched by this at all. That's only conditioning for the general public, and I think they test us a bit through those systems. how much we can take.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Those Masonic rituals where you take off your shoes to go through. All because one story from a guy in Detroit, shoe bomber, more complete nonsense.
I think they're always sort of, I think everything that's put out there and all of these things is sort of a, it's a data mining exercise, right? They're just continually taking the temperature of what the far the envelope can be pushed, right? And what people's opinions are and what they respond to and this or that, PSYOP, they're monitoring the social media and I guess whether people vote and how much resistance they put up and taking off their shoes and always just seeing, like you said, how far people can be pushed.
Right now, they seem to be so successful that it almost seems a little bit tiresome for them to see how well their scheme is working.
Yeah, it's like being a David Copperfield performing for an audience of 4-year-olds, like pulling a card from behind their ear. After a while, it's like, oh, I need someone that's going to be a little more challenged by my advanced tricks, right?
Probably bemuses them how we strive to come to terms with the scale of it all and how we are fumbling. So might tune in to some of this type of shows from time to time to see how we are doing just for the fun of it. You know,
I think that's been mentioned on Clues Forum a time or two about the idea that it's more valuable to have Clues Forum and those sites available, and they can tune up the psyops and like the first ones to expose the mistakes, right? And they're like, oh, look what we did wrong in this one. It's almost like they're getting graded at Clues Forum. So they have to study harder for the next one. But then in a way that doesn't make sense because it seems like they're getting worse as time goes on. Like they don't care.
They have such a success rate that, as they probably have the numbers of audience that actually tune in to these outlets, they are probably pretty reassured on the scale, comfortable level for them.
So there's a comment here in the chat that says, your acceptance and acquiescence to airport, any extortion is saddening. Not sure. I guess the extortion maybe is referring to the $120 of trusted traveler money that is, in my estimation, is probably worth it if you do a lot of traveling. I don't do that much. I do have a friend that he lost a client in a couple of shows by being actually he refused a cavity search. They wanted to take him in and I would refuse a cavity search. I can't even begin to imagine what the set of events was that led to someone, you know, expecting him to submit to that. But yeah, he didn't do that, and he missed the plane. And I would have missed the plane too. I wouldn't do that. But yeah, the pat down. I don't know. I don't know how do you get around it if you just if you drive everywhere. I do know. I have a friend that drives. He doesn't really fly. He drives across 3 or 4 states to go to different things. But I guess if you're gonna fly, you're gonna have to do something. You're gonna have to go through some type of security, as far as I know.
I don't engage in extensive traveling myself either. So it's like contact with those kind of limited. I kind of understand Pinin that it's probably something we should be more against.
I mean, my level of resistance is insisting on not going through the backscatter machine. That's what I've done on the probably 10 or 12 times.
My position is to never take off my shoes and insist that I go through and they see if it has any incidents on their scanners, because I know the scanners, they are not really working in Europe. It's like it's more like percentage-wise popping up of the signal, you know, because they need to have these protocols where they need to search at least 10 or 20% of the passenger. So it's like I find it amusing how the same shoes I get signaled and not signaled and all that stuff all the time. But most of the time, I'm able to go through the controls with my shoes on and not being cut down.
That's in Europe, right?
We try to talk to the agents that they are so clueless about what they're doing. So it's like even the few times I got a bit upset about the usefulness of the work they're doing. Like, it has no incidence on their thinking or not. It just feels like they're not thinking. They're automatons working for probably a very low paid.
Yeah, there's a quite a large force of them over here. I'm always curious of whether that's factored into the GBT as positive sign. I think it might be.
Just nowadays with the cheap air flight, the personnel is less and less trained and less well paid. Not have very qualified workforce at the airport positions where you would come into contact.
Well, I always thought it to be more of a psychological goal conditioning exercise than anything else. Just conditioning people to respond to whoever the perceived authority is. The person wearing a uniform is they're the authority. And
before, like, one of the bonuses was to have a very good-looking flight attendant, team of flight attendants, but that's not in the picture anymore, as I see it, from Europe at least.
Yeah, it was sort of a meme at one time.
Yeah, they want to make traveling sexy and lustful. And they took away the food, the good-looking flight attendants, and now we're left with bad food and regular people.
So listen, Unreal, I'm going to have to go ahead and sign off at this point.
Okay, nice talking to you, Faris Valia. So
same here.
Have a good rest of the day where you are. Hope to get in touch sooner than later on the other chat.
Sounds great. You do the same.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Hello, my name's Tom Dalper, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio. This is a discussion about a popular figure in the alternative in from the UK, David Icke. And with me today on Fakeologist Radio to discuss this very interesting topic of this curious character is my good friend from Aberdeen, Scotland, high up there in the north, the Highlands, the Hawkeye, the New, and it's Fling Your Sporran around and give a big salute to Mojo. Hi. Is there any way of getting Ab to scrub any of these posts? He's a lovely voice. He's a lovely cuddly guest. A lovely, terrific, warm.
Jimmy Savile.
Jimmy Savile. Jimmy Savile, the man who could now then, who could.
Who I could didn't realise there was
muted. Rate you and give you a prize at the same time.
Jim, I'll fix it for you.
And give you a badge.
Oh, gee, Barry.
Anyway. What a strange character. We had to grow up with him.
I know. We did. And I can still hear myself echoing in your background.
Ah, yeah, that's what's wrong. I've got headphones in and I couldn't hear anything because they're not plugged in. Ha ha.
Duh.
I did this slightly embarrassing intro to you. Did you hear it?
I did, but I couldn't. You couldn't hear me because I was muted.
Oh, between the pair of us. Yeah, okay.
We make good radio hosts.
Fools. We're admitted. Ladies and gentlemen, we're a pair of fools here. I'm going to try and tell you about something that you've been fooled about. Are we the best people to be doing this? Mm-hmm. You never know. Stay tuned for another exciting episode of...
Fakeologist.com.
Fakeologist Radio. Yeah. So okay. So, David Icke. David Icke. We're going to talk about David Icke.
I don't know where to start.
Well, David Icke was born in April the 29th, 1952, and is an English writer, public speaker, and a former professional footballer and sports broadcaster.
Yeah. He wasn't a footballer for long.
Well, there's an interesting connection because he played for, I think, Leicester, and he was a goalkeeper. Now, with what we know about the fix in football, I think, well, mm-hmm. certainly what I'm getting around to.
He could have been, you know...
Well, goalkeepers are very, very key in that, I would think, And
maybe,
then they'd have to be groomed from early on. He was a BBC man as well.
It doesn't take much to be that. Oops.
Well, I mean, I had coffee with the former head of music at BBC a few weeks ago.
Mm.
I mean,
you've
you know
got,
what I mean?
You've got big connections, haven't you, darling?
But what I'm saying is, I do know people, you know, I'm nothing, but I do know people. I live in Cambridge, I'm a singer, met some interesting people, you know. I have, to be honest.
What do you sing?
I was successful in my own, without making money successful in a sort of way, sort of thing.
Hmm.
Got recognition on a certain level.
Cool. Let's talk about David Icke then. When did you first come across him?
Well, as a BBC sports presenter. He used
no,
to
no, but
snooker.
I mean, you know, as in, you know, the whole...
Well,
you know.
my impression of him, when, in 1991, he came out on Wogan, which is a big chat show in England, didn't he?
Yeah, I saw it.
And he declared himself a psychic.
No, he didn't.
Told him. He was a healer.
He was set up as a patsy. You know, they set him up and they really, you know, they flogged him publicly.
Well, this is the official story. Let's look at the official story. He was a BBC sports presenter and a spokesman for the Green Party when So he's already got this Green Party thing going. And as we know about the controlling Green Party, one would think, the mainstream left there. And then in 1990, a psychic told him that he was a healer who had been placed on Earth for a purpose and that the spirit world was going to pass him messages, you know. So,
yeah.
And in 1991, March 1991, he held a press conference to announce that he was a son of the Godhead. A phrase he later said the media had misunderstood, but he said it was. And then their subsequent appearance on Wogan was the one that you're saying now was a sort of setup, and he was made to look very foolish, and the whole nation, he was made a laughingstock. I mean, this is where I come in with Wogan. He was made a public laughingstock. So I think it part of his story, it's interesting to present that official story, what went on.
Wogan actually apologised for that. Do you know that?
Well, yes. I did kind of half know that because I saw the follow-up years later, didn't I? They revisited it. And there was talk of that, I remember, at the time, sort of thing. I did watch that through. And there was a time when I thought, yeah, I'm with you, Ikey. Yeah, look at that, how things have changed. But now, my opinion is, this was all on the mainstream. You know, it's all a presented view, really. And then Ike has, you know, yes, he has, you know, become a leading figure in the alternative since, and some of the things he's saying. Do you remember that BBC programme a few years back which said, you know, was David Icke right?
Yes.
We can see that he's, yeah, so I think that he is promoted BBC
I'm
man.
I'm quite gullible, actually, but I quite like him.
Well, he is likeable, I think, and I think he talks... he talks to a lot of sanity.
But he's kind of real. You know, he's realer than any of them. He's realer than Wogan.
I think that's why he's kind of credible, in a sense, that he a lot of figures of the alternative are credible because they're, you know, some of their things are saying that they are, you know, more real. So actually the absolute bullshit we get on the shiny, sheeny surface of things in the mainstream. So he says 9/11 was an inside job. You know, great. You know, that's a big voice. You know, he's an ex-BBC man, ex-head of the Green Party, very famous in England, anyway, in the UK, and he's saying that. So you and I should be like, we agree with that, that this is quite impressive. But he doesn't say that...
the Jews are in control.
It says that he probably thinks there's planes there, doesn't he? And he doesn't think there's victims. He doesn't talk about victims. Then you see him turning up in New York with them. That guy, Luke Radowski, doing some kind of... And there's David Icke turning up in the background. It's almost spooky when you see those sort of slick videos with the high production values that are supposed to be alternative ones, and then suddenly Luke Radowski and David Icke are in the same shot, and you think, well, stuff. You know what I mean?
I didn't see that.
Well, this is how I kind of put things together. You can't always say just because you don't trust someone, you can't trust another person that's in the same video as them. But the whole presentation, you look at things and take it all in and make an assessment. And quite a long time ago, I came to that conclusion with him, Mojo. I think, but it doesn't mean I'm right. You know,
did you ever see any of Charlie Veach stuff?
Oh, Charlie Veach. Now, he came to Cambridge. I met Charlie Veach. Mm-hmm. I confronted Charlie Veach. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another one who I found compelling. What do you think of Charlie?
Oh, I totally fancied the pants off him.
You see, this is personality. This is how we see personalities.
Well, he's
compelling.
Gorgeous.
Yeah,
he's like 6'5" or something.
Oh,
he's absolutely stunning.
In the flesh. A bit of a tummy. He was a good agent. I mean, he was a convinced. He came here to Cambridge, right? And he went down to all the sort of union guys and everything, got into the left in Cambridge, and he just walked into it. And he was they became a spokesman for them and spoke to all the press. It was a brilliant performance, really, from him for a short period of time.
I liked his stuff, but then he did this whole turnaround. I think he was getting too big. He was doing the whole, Alex Jones thing with the loudspeaker. He was doing all that. He was.
Yeah, he did it in Cambridge.
Yeah. And they just took him down. I guess they must have paid him off, did they?
I think in 2011, I went down to a demonstration, which was a left-wing thing, a lot of union people there. There was a few people from around the country. It was something going on in Cambridge, you know, to my shame, I can't remember exactly what it was about. But it's a political little rally in Cambridge or something on the corner of the Market Square. And there Charlie Beach turned up, you know, and I was down there with a camera with a friend of mine who's a union guy. He's a quite high up in the unions, and he's a friend of mine. He asked me to go down there to film him because he thought I was interested in it. I was making little films at the time. And so I went down there and interviewed him. But then Charlie Veitch turned up, and he said, oh, I just turned up by accident. You know, I was just walking along. I didn't realize this was on today. But, you know, he was flouncing around, and he had a brand new Bill Hicks T-shirt on, and it just almost looked too new. And then he had a bit of a sort of stomach poking it, which made it look a bit fatter. And believe me, I liked him and thought he was an attractive guy before. So I'm picking up on things you might pick up on as well there. So it's attractive. I thought, oh, he's quite a little bit, not quite the gorgeous figure I thought. But then I asked him a question. It was about 2011, I think, when this happened. I asked him a question. I said, they're in Syria. I said, the rebels are merely doing the work of the... We're down here at a left-wing rally in Cambridge here, but surely, what do you think is going on in Syria? You know, the rebels are... In Libya, I think. Maybe it was Libya, even. I said the rebels are merely doing the work of their enemies, you know, their devout enemies. But, i.e., this is all contrived, you know. And he said anyone who thinks what they know what's going on, who really says they know what's going on down there, is a charlatan. And off he went. And that was sort of what I took from the interview, as in... he was going with the mainstream view, really, at that time.
Oh, shit, I've got hiccups.
I said, basically, the rebels in Libya or whatever are working for the US State Department, and it's just their friend, Al-Qaeda friend, are now friend for their purposes of this activity in Libya. And this was happening in real time, and he wouldn't go there. So anyway, I thought he was saying to Charlie Veitch, what did you think he'd sold out? You think he said sold out because he did that 9/11 thing, didn't he, when he went to New York, and then he had a turnaround during the show,
yeah.
And he thought 9/11's no longer an inside job. I mean,
yeah.
It's so obviously, like,
to me, they actually silenced him. They paid him off and silenced him because he was getting quite big, you know. He was quite popular, I think.
That's an interesting question. Could you get to that point of true alternative research and then be bought off, sort of thing?
Yeah.
You think paid off to become then just like, you know, an agent of the alternative, but not allowed to go to a certain point?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they showed him the JFK video. I don't know.
I don't know. He was very slick, Charlie. He was very slick. I'm suspicious.
I liked
of Charlie
him.
Veitch. Yeah. I'm suspicious.
No, I wasn't to begin with.
He was from Qatar, and now this is.
He wasn't. He was from Scotland.
It was Qatarese. He came via Scotland. So there's an interesting connection. At that time, everyone was cheering on the rebels who were deposing the good man Gaddafi, the baddie Gaddafi in Libya, weren't they? Mm. But the alternative wasn't.
I like Gaddafi, actually.
Mainstream alternative, right? There wasn't like a big outcry against the war in that. Next thing, all the oil's going out through Qatar.
Qatar? Where's that?
Qatar. Well, it's near a drum kit. Come on, let's rock and roll. That is, yes.
Yeah, right.
Qatar.
Yeah, I knew.
There it is. Yeah, you've got plenty. Yeah, you're asking me. You come from Scotland. So cold up there. You've got it permanently.
Mm-hmm. It's warm just now, though.
Worm.
Aye. It's worm.
It's warm.
It's about 20. It's about 20 degrees.
It's 8 o'clock at night in the UK, and it's 20 degrees up there at the top, is it?
In my house, it's 70 odds. Because I get the sun all day, I've got two windows, and it's just like a greenhouse.
Two windows?
Aye.
Flipping heck.
Yeah.
So, that's all right, you sort of effectively, you live in a greenhouse. Two-window greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's a good place to grow.
Right, so let's get back to David Icke.
Yes, David, the mainstream alternative.
Have you watched his shows? Have you watched his, deliberations about stuff?
Well, the last time I sat through one was probably about 2 years ago.
And it's pretty close. It's pretty close to the truth, I think.
Hits on a lot of subjects, which I agree with, I think. I'm going from memory here, and as I said, it was your subject really, David Icke, so I said, I'll just come off what I've got on him, but my humble thoughts on him, but you've looked at him more than me, so you know more about his stuff. But no, I'm with you, on this. Lots of things he says make sense, I think, but
so
this is sort of general things that lots of people talk about.
Do you think he's actually, I mean, I find it quite hard to believe that he's been paid to go that far, and
he's a long con agent in my book.
A what?
Right? I mean, so he's a sponsored agent. I mean, you say he's paid to do it. Well, he's just working for the BBC. He's got a job. People are paid to do all sorts of different things.
I don't believe he's working for the BBC. Have you heard what he says?
He can say what he likes, and he's probably right, you know, but maybe he's not.
He knows all about Diana. There's no way he's working.
Does he know
the
all about Diana? Does he? Does he? What happened with Diana? I don't know.
He was killed by them.
So you think Diana was killed by them?
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't realise we were so diametrically opposed on things.
Oh, you
didn't
believe that?
Oh, okay. I used to,
but you don't know.
Now, I'm much more open to the idea of, I hope they staged it. If you look at Mohammed Al-Fayed and Harrods.
Oh, what, they're still alive and all that shite. I can't believe that,
Well,
do you really think that William and Harry could go through their lives pretending that their mother's dead? I don't think so, I can't believe the two sons could pretend that their mother's dead.
I had a big thing, right, for a long, long time, I was, that Diana was killed, okay? So we can talk on the same terms on this, Mojo, don't worry, you know, I'm there, I was there for a long time.
I was at a funeral.
There was a massive, massive, operation, wasn't it? A massive, massive thing, you know, the Queen spoke and the country was full of people.
Because you had to.
There was an outpouring of emotion that was real, wasn't it? It wasn't just staged.
Oh, fucking right. I was there.
In London, people were out on the streets. It was quite amazing. All those flowers, you know, a whole load of them. It was we talk about the sort of, no, it was real. That part of it, it was self-fulfilling. It was like mass hysteria.
Why? It was not fake. I was there.
Exactly. So that happened, that whole public emotion. But that doesn't make the whole event.
Do you think she's still, living on a fucking some island somewhere with Doty?
I've no idea, but I should imagine she could. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if she needs to live on an island. No one would believe it. You can look. The Challenger.
There's no way that her children could live that lie. No way.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Mojo.
Anyway, Challenger. Yeah, I've seen that, where they're all still alive.
Well, there you go. What about, think about how their children could live the lives or whatever. You know, I don't know, maybe
no, that's totally different, you know, compared to being in the royal family of Britain.
You see, you're believing the whole story, really, aren't you? At that point.
What, she was killed?
Well, the whole, you know, I don't know. She the whole narrative of all the boyfriends.
I grew up with her. She was my age, you know.
Yeah, the whole world for a second were waiting for you just possibly to come out of the fact that she was your sister. But no, 1981, she got married, didn't she, to Charlie? He was almost handsome then, wasn't it? My mum liked Charles.
No, he was never handsome.
No. All right, just speak for yourself.
He was always an ugly cunt.
17 fags later. El ugly cunt, Charlie. Yeah, fuck him. I'll start this conversation as a civilized woman. It's all gone now, David Icke. He's a fucking agent. I didn't realize you were so clueless, my lovely. I love you very much, but I have to educate you here. This is nonsense. This is not, no, I mean, yeah, I suppose, no, I step back a second.
No. Why on earth would David Icke be an agent? Why would they do that? I don't get it.
Oh, he's a living, breathing, working agent of the alternative. I mean, he's able to say these things.
Oh, that's, I don't know.
And if he attaches things, right, he attaches 9/11 with an inside job, okay? So you've got a massive amount of people that if they ever hear that 9/11 is an inside job, you know, the DBA, discredit by association, it's attached to David Icke, and they'll say, well, David Icke thinks that, so that's bullshit. Because he was ridiculed en masse.
And yes, but that's what happens.
He's not talking about Vic Sims on 9/11. Well, no. This is where you have a stumbling block, because you were last night saying that the firemen were killed, weren't you?
Yeah, I believe that.
Been, but I don't think they were. I think that's the key to how these things work. I think it's more of a complete contrivance. If you can completely control the area, you can completely control the outcome.
Seen...
And it would actually be outrageous if you did kill people with the way they
have
do
you
it,
seen
the
all the videos of them?
Yeah, you know, fucking 100... bunch of killing people with you, staging it to stage the whole thing.
There's too many videos that look real of firemen absolutely don't know what to do.
Well, some of them you could have to go back and study. I remember them so well, those guys sitting down with all that flour on their faces.
Do you think that somebody just sprinkled flour on their faces or making cupcakes, were there?
Well, we've seen people throwing bags of something, dust over people at various things. At the Boston bombing, I believe. I think I saw someone opening a bag, tipping it over. I mean, but we're talking about one of the biggest psyops, and you agree it is a psychological operation.
Yes, of course.
This is one of the biggest planned psyops operations for the millennium. You know, into the new millennium.
Since Pearl Harbor.
As Ab said the other night, yeah. So you can, you've got to make it as realistic looking as possible.
Yes, but have you watched that footage of the firemen and stuff? Have you?
Well, I don't know. You see, I don't know which one you mean. I don't know.
102 minutes that changed America or whatever. For me, it looked pretty real, like.
Well, I'll tell you, when I first studied 9/11, it was that sort of thing that I just kept going over and over and over and looking again to try and prove that, you know, was that real? Is this fake, this film? It's looking for chinks in it.
No, there's no Chinese.
I'll have to look at it. Oh, there's no Chinese in that. All right. I don't bother watching it. I only watch films for chinks, you know what I mean? Or that or Packies. I love them. I love both, honey.
Oh, dear. This isn't a live stream, honey.
Yes.
Maybe we should go back to the lobby.
What a place for satire. It's in the fucking live stream. Yeah, I know. I mean, have you heard some of the stuff Rolo comes out with? I think we're probably safe. But, I mean, it may be, look, we said we weren't going to do this for that long. And, you know, it's 8:10 at night. And flipping it, you and I have got foot massages booked and a bowl of jelly. And look at it. We're at opposite ends of the country, but we've got similar habits. But David Icke, let's thrash out David Icke a bit more. Because I know you quite like David Icke, don't you?
I do, right?
Not only do you find Charlie Veitch, the personality, attractive, you find David Icke, the personality, attractive.
Mm-hmm.
So you quite like to get him down and thrash him out, perhaps.
Well, when he started getting that sort of hand thing that sort of turned into a claw, like Margaret Thatcher...
Wow. I didn't even know Margaret Thatcher had a hand that turned into a claw.
Oh, she did. It's like carpal tunnel, whatever.
Oh, right. So, yeah, I do understand that now. And
Ike had the same thing, but it was called arthritis or whatever.
All right. Yeah. I had the same thing as well. They said I was just being fucking rude, sticking my finger up all the time. Charming. It's a medical condition. I could have claimed on that. Yeah. Instead, yeah. I was vilified. What a load of rubbish! This isn't a humour, is it? This is supposed to be an intelligent discussion about David Icke.
Intelligent
for the great listeners of
the fakeologist.com.
You'll get yourself a job speaking like that. I think your laugh should go down as that. Yeah, we should play it as a bit of a theme.
Yes. I can do any laugh you want.
Well. I
grew up with so many laughs, like crazy laughs, like, you know, Morecambe and Wise. And, you know, I didn't think it was very funny, but I had to laugh. And the two Ronnies and all the films of Barbara Windsor getting her tits out every now and again. And
the
stuff.
Carry On film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, where are you going with this?
I don't know.
we grew up with that. Yeah.
We grew up with craziness.
Well, but there's personalities, I think, really are very effective. Because in a lot of ways, they can be just figureheads and kind of for mass impression, you know.
Mm.
A lot of people, David Icke is an important figurehead in the alternative in this country, I think. And he was put there in 1990 with the decade ahead just before 9/11 coming up. And he's, we can see the styling of the alternative, I think, Mojo. But having said that, you know, I learned a whole bunch of what I've learned from things that were controlled entities. I see as controlled entities now, including... Right. You know, Alex Icke, you know, some things from Icke, the things he's saying. Because, of course, a lot of these people say a lot of things that are real. I think they have to. Otherwise, they'd be completely incredible.
I just find it hard, you know, coming from a normal person. Well, not that normal, but coming from a sort of semi-normal person point of view that we bought and paid for and, you know, told to say certain things, and I just, that doesn't compute with me. That doesn't, I wouldn't do that.
It's a big psychological ploy, a big psychological ploy that
you know
can
what
be
I mean?
Sort of a fulcrum of, a figurehead
how much,
like Icke can be a
how
fulcrum
much
of.
Would I have to pay you to say whatever, you know, I mean, do you think that we're all bought and paid for? Hello?
Yeah, sometimes it's a shame that the pause isn't recorded because there was a big pause. Do you think we're all bought and paid for?
And you didn't have an answer?
No, I didn't have an answer. I couldn't even think of it. I don't understand. No, this thing, I'm a very slow. Sometimes I'm incredibly slow mojo to think about things. But I try, you know, you'd ask me a question. I try and think about it. Am I bought and paid for? Sort of, aren't I? Like anything else in the system.
You know how they're trying to tell us that these people are all puppets. They're all puppets.
No, they're not all puppets. A lot of people, right, in the system, because it's such a rigged game, are honest people supporting it without knowing, which was the point I was trying to clumsily make about Charlie Veach earlier and the rebels in Libya. You see what I mean? They are unwittingly doing the work of their sworn enemies very often. That's what, perhaps, you know, like I'm thinking of perhaps the left, the Greenpeace or whatever. They were set up because there was a nuclear war scare. So the whole setup of Greenpeace was started as a nuclear bombs validation, a promotion for them.
I never liked Greenpeace for some reason.
See, there's probably a lot of well-intentioned people working for it, but just by going to these marches and anti-nuclear weapons and camping at Greenham Common, they're supporting it, they're validating it. So they're not bought and paid for, are they? They're just living
their lives
within the system.
You believe in nuclear weapons, like...
They believe in it, and they're probably good people, a lot of them.
No, but do you?
No, not anymore. But that's what gives me that insight, amazingly. You know, that's why I get to this point, because I see that probably is a complete con.
Well, I always remember Billy Connolly saying to me that he would have loved to be in a nuclear bomb salesman. He says, because it could have been full of ping pong balls and cheese. It's not like they're going to try it out, is it?
Yeah, oh. Good. Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, that was it. But I grew up in fearful of it as a child.
Aye, so did I. We were told to put doors against the wall and hide under it.
Yeah, they showed us these sort of basic sort of air raid shelters, didn't they? For if there was a nuclear
and I
fire,
thought,
a
well,
4-minute warning.
Fucking
a 4-minute warning. I mean, I live by that. But again, it's mass psychological. Mm.
That
you know,
was, I agree,
impression.
That was, the totally was. I mean, we were frightened, we were scared, we were, that you know, the Russians are going to nuke us and all that shite.
Oh, I mean, it's ground that most people here, yeah, it's well gone over, isn't it? The Cold War and the fallacy of it, the presented reality. Of that
I remember, sorry to interrupt, but I remember... I was like, I'm about 12 or something, and my cousin was probably about 19 or 20, and I says to him, they're going to nuke us, and he says, no, they're not. And I sort of took his word for it, because he kind of knew that wasn't going to happen.
Well, yeah, I think the sanity rules, really, doesn't it? And a lot of times people sort of take these things almost literally and sort of say, isn't it terrible that we're being... In a sense, common sense does rule, and the reality is that people...
Well, I think it depends.
They're not going to bloody... It doesn't make sense for them to use them anyway, did it?
No,
you know,
of course
what,
not.
If Russia were going to bomb us, well, they told us we had better weapons in the West anyway.
Oh,
and we
yeah,
could bomb the shit out of them. What the fuck would any sane person do that for? Kill loads of people.
Exactly.
Make the place completely uninhabitable. The whole place be a fucking mess. And no, everyone's unhappy. Why?
Yeah,
why?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No. Was,
I believed it
bullshit.
When I was 13, though.
But it's powerful, man.
Yeah,
it still works. Oh, it still works. You believe it when you're 13. You're frightened of it as children. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was. But it does last into adulthood, that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's still that phantom, isn't there? The phantom's still there to other people. They're not to us anymore. Were you liberated by reading... Where did you first think that was a fake? And
what, the nukes?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I thought, you know, the videos of the... The blast, when you look at it now, through adult eyes, it's like, it looks like toy cars and toy town. It's like blowing up Legoland or something.
Yeah, the classic Jesse War. Was it Jesse War, that Nuke Lies video? Yeah,
yeah.
And that showcased that right from the, yeah, that original YouTube.
Yeah.
That I was shown. Yeah. Yeah, that footage of the old tests, and you go and look at all the old tests from China as well. You were talking about China earlier. They had, even way back then, they were doing them. Was it China? Yeah, I think so. Chinese tests. They've got their space program now. You said about their space program earlier. That's so funny. Their space program is from the ISS. Do you see it?
Yeah.
Well, not the ISS. Their International Space Station, their equivalent. It was so weird, man.
It was really bad. It was like... 1969 standards.
Fuck yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And people watch that. You can show people that in the West and they say, oh, yeah, that is fake, but that's the Chinese, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then they get on with their day. They don't take it any further.
No.
But when you really think about it, if the Chinese...
They're too busy.
...massive state is going to con on that level, it should be mainstream news. And it's obviously, you know, you can see the air bubbles escaping. It doesn't look vaguely realistic. In fact, it's a complete joke. Everyone should be having a laugh at it.
I know.
Oh,
it's almost like kind of giving up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's like we're walking in a file towards oblivion, and just sort of go to work to go and clock in with your card, and they're just looking like zombies. And they say, "No, this is where we work. I've got to do it. I've got to do it. I keep doing it." Got to keep doing it.
Oh,
don't
dear.
We all do that a bit? Yeah.
I don't.
What do you do for a work?
I'm an artist.
Are you an artist? This artist, by the sounds of it, I don't know.
Yeah. Apart from that, I'm a real artist as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm a sort of artist. Well, I try and do make art.
Oh, right. But what do you do? Oh, music. Oh, I don't. I don't do music.
No, you do art. You told me that.
Yeah, I can do Picasso or Van Gogh or Dali. I can copy anything you want, so, yeah.
Oh, you're a forger. Excellent.
Aye.
There's a lot of work for them around here.
Well,
yes. Fakeology.
Yeah, I'm a fake artist.
No, I mean, it's like me saying I can do Mick Jagger and I can do sort of some rock and roll songs and rock songs, classic rock, frontman type. You know what I mean? Beatles, like that a bit, isn't it? It's great. I love artists and, will you marry me? I finally found someone, I've found a woman I can finally talk to for longer than 12 minutes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe we should meet if you want.
Well, I mean, that's incredibly...
Who do you
This is in live stream. And ladies and gentlemen, you see, this is how easy it is to meet and greet.
Do you look like Robbie Williams at all, no?
Right, well, you'll have to go to YouTube and look at Tom Dalpra. I can't, yeah. Go on. Now, we're going to get our live stream right now. All right, we've done David Icke. We don't need any more of this nonsense. I wish we could edit these things. How do I get drawn into these conversations? I got my mojo working.
Right, let's go back to the lobby.
Let's go back in the lobby.
Yeah, cheers, good idea.
Everyone. Oh dear.
Let's go back in the lobby.
I got my mojo working, but it just won't work on you. So, in conclusion, I suggest that David Icke is a long con, rather like a Koresh figure, Cyrus Teed figure, perhaps, and attach some of the alternative ideas to these messiahs. It's a device of carrying the alternative message and dissipating it. Are you there, Mojo?
Hi, this is Therillium, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.